Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, this is Salamander Jones, and you're listening to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio!
I try to make sense sometimes, and I don't know, whatever.
Pardon me.
You look at this.
And I got one back this week. Thank you.
Yes, he did. Yes, you did. Sorry.
It's all right.
Apologize.
It's okay. Let's move on. Moving on now. Omega.
I belch professionalism.
This is the Greek god, Demetrius Papadon, the greatest unsigned talent today, and you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
Or, no, you know what, you didn't ask that question. Your beautiful assistant over there with his blushing cheeks right now asked me that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Listen, and his curly magical hair. He does have beautiful curly magical hair.
Well, thank you.
I do.
You're welcome. Will he
get a boa at the show?
No.
Damn it.
Damn it.
There's nothing free in this world, okay? You got to earn a boa. We don't hand them
I'm
out.
I'm the bottom 2%. I can't have a boa.
Oh.
No, you can't have
a boa.
Do you have any idea how expensive boas are? I own 347,000 of them myself, but none of them are for you.
All right, I'm sorry.
Now, I do have a question. You guys don't have to answer this. It's a little controversial.
Did he just call me a chinchilla?
No.
No, I called the boa a chinchilla. I did not call you a chinchilla.
Oh.
Don't get excited.
No, I'm all right. I'll calm it back down. Good.
But as I was saying, this one's a little controversial. It's
fire.
It's an exclusive for Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Oh, boy.
Now, I heard that at the next DWS show, there's going to be a jail pen match. Care to comment?
Wow. Did you just load your gun? Did you just load your gun, Dean?
He loaded it.
Well,
Dean loaded it.
Dean, I'm going to tell you this.
Revenge, bloody revenge, damn it.
I'm going to pull the pin on the grenade then. Okay, listen. I know nothing of what you're talking about.
Hi, I'm Big Bottom Trouser, the ring announcer from Sideshow Pro Wrestling, and you're listening to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
I'm just here.
He's just here adding some elegance to the show.
Look, I have to try to keep this show classy, you know. Somebody has to be a professional around here. I can't count on these two yahoos to do it, so
I'm going to do it.
If you could only see how he scolds us in the chat room. Scolds us.
It really is. It's like, I will leave the show.
No, that was a
personal I will Ringo Starr this if you don't.
Oh, Ringo Starr. No.
Hey, Ms. Urulala, speaking of lasted long, do you think Ricky the Model and Carrie are doing it?
Are you for real? Oh my God. I watch the Animal Channel sometimes, but I don't know. Ricky, oh dear God, you ought to go wash your mouth after with soap.
All right, I'll be right back. I'm sorry.
I just had an image. I'm washing my eye out with water. Oh, Mr. Popo. Hold on.
Okay. Take care of Mr. Popo.
No, it's good. It's the neighbor's.
Oh, it's okay.
Oh, that's good to know.
It's the neighbor's dog. I don't know what the hell just happened. Oh la la. So we were talking about Papadon. Is there anybody else in ECWA right now that you have I was going to say you have your eye on. That's not funny. But...
Oh, that's extremely funny.
I'm sorry. We're going to hell.
Oh, I'm burning. I'm not even getting to the 10th layer of hell. I'm burning.
And good evening and welcome to the 51st episode of Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. I am your host, the Dean of Credibility, Double D, and you can find me at Folsom County. Now with me as always is the above average comedian, Dan the Man Colachico.
Yo, what's going on, folks? You can follow me at DanLaw83.
You certainly can. All I'm going to say is I hope Chrissy calls back. I think she got bored with the intro.
All I have to say is that intro brought me great joy.
It was a good intro, but perhaps it's not as enjoyable to our first guest. She will be back. You know what? We have had a poor track record with the past couple of weeks of our first guest not showing up.
Do they not know our credibility? Do they not know who we are?
I am the Dean of Credibility. That's right, Double D.
And I am the man. This is Cujo.
Oh. Your head gets bigger by the week, Dan.
But you just said you were the Dean of Credibility.
I am.
Somebody else named you that.
Yes.
Somebody else named me Cujo.
Oh. Because he never mind.
He said it many times, and I said, you know what, just, we'll keep that.
Anyway, that man will be here later on tonight.
Oh, joy.
Yeah.
After getting his posterior pumped around last weekend.
He certainly did. Now, Dan, you can read the blog, and we have a new writer on staff now. Referee Jimmy Dillon is writing. He reviewed Raw this past week, so congratulations to referee Jimmy Dillon, who he's joined us, Dan.
Is it Dylan or Dillon?
It's Dillon.
Okay. Yeah. Well, speaking of Raw, we have some WWE stuff to go over later.
We certainly do. We certainly do, and we'll get to that a little bit later on. But follow the blog at HIACTalkRadio.com. You can follow the Twitter at HIACTalkRadio, like the Facebook at Facebook.com/HIACTalkRadio.
Slash.
Subscribe on iTunes, Dan. Are you even subscribed on there?
I am. That's how I get the show every week.
How about you leave a review? Everybody that's listening, we have thousands of listeners.
So you want me to leave a review on my own show?
I did.
Oh. Well, I could just have somebody else subscribe to Hell in a Cell on iTunes and leave a review for us.
Leave a review.
Please?
Yes.
She wants money.
Oh, wonderful.
My producer, quote unquote, just told me she wants money for it.
Subscribe on iTunes, as I said, and also you can find us on Stitcher Radio. We're always branching out, constantly branching out, Dan.
The more people that can reach us, the more people that will hear the word of the great Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. And I just wanted to say real quick to that producer, to Kelly, my girlfriend, I said it on Facebook earlier, I want to say it on the show, I want to thank you for your support on this ride that you've been giving me, and I hope I can return that someday.
And, of course, we are proudly part of the BradyHicks.com. We are there right now. Things are back at the BradyHicks.com.
Brady Hicks is back?
Brady Hicks. In the room was on last night.
Yeah, I know. I was being facetious.
But he's back, Dan.
He's back.
Now, speaking of the show here tonight, Dan, we have, of course, Chrissy Rivera will be joining us. She's back, so I'll have to ask her if we bored her with that rather long intro. It was our longest intro to date.
We shouldn't bore her because that was class stuff.
That was some good stuff. Maybe she, I don't know. But we'll ask once she comes on.
No problem.
We'll certainly ask. Now, of course, we also have, as I alluded to, Justin America will be here with his segment, Just in America.
Is he back from the White Cliffs of Dover, or?
I hope he is, Dan, because
although after this last weekend, that's where I'd hide.
My goodness. The Legion of Anarchy, they're scary, Dan.
They're scary dudes.
They have tears and tattoos. I don't know.
It's
a little unsettling.
I don't know if that's what scared me about him, but that's okay.
It's a little unsettling, and we're also going to be joined by Blinky Productions, Dan.
Well, that's not his name. His name is Chris Nordarelli, but yes, from Blinky Productions. Talk about fan films he does, the state of Deadpool, and other dork stuff.
You know what?
Stuff.
You know what? I did check out. He has a fan film called Friday the 31st.
Does he?
Yes, and it's Jason versus, of course, Michael Myers. So that check that out, people. Check out all this stuff.
It's good stuff. It's good quality. It's got a professional feel to it. And do research. It's out there. It's leaked. The Deadpool series is really, really good. Unfortunately, it only lasts 2 episodes.
You know what, Dan? I'll tell you this much. I watched a 2nd episode, and then the walls came crashing down, as they say.
So you touched it once again.
There you go, Dan.
Can you do me a favor and touch that new WWE World title?
I don't mind it, but we'll get into that. Stay on the course, Dan, because we're going to be joined by Chrissy Rivera right now.
So oh, yeah!
Going to play your theme, and we'll get her right on. SL Talk Radio to Chrissy Rivera. How are you doing tonight, Chrissy?
I am doing wonderful. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing well. Dan is also here with us, and we're going to get right into it.
Now, all right. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Yes. So, what was I going to say? Oh, were you always a fan? I mean, is that how you got into this? Why wrestling? Why did you choose that to get into?
Why this crazy world of wrestling? I get that question very often, actually, but I watched it when I was a kid, not religiously, but on and off. I was always WWF, not a WCW fan until later on in my years, but I have an older brother, and he was really into it, so I would watch it with him. So I started getting back into it probably when I was in high school. And I started watching it, like, more and more then, and just became addicted to it at that point and watched it all the time. So it was a work in progress.
All right. Now, where did you break in? Where did you get your training?
I originally started training. It was called AWA in North Jersey. It was in Union City. I started training there under Nino Capone. There were some other people there. I know Jay Lethal helped train there for a while. I originally started there. Then they went through some ownership changes. They changed their name to Ace, I believe, Ace, A-C-E, something like that. So I actually completed the rest of my training at DGW Academy, which is now in South Philly. So.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to ask the probably an obvious question, and being a short person or a shorter person, mm-hmm. this is one that's, the one I want to know big time is, did you ever doubt it with your size, or did anybody ever tell you you couldn't do this?
Actually, I was my worst enemy. I never thought that I could ever become a wrestler. I thought I was too small, you know, too short, would never, you know, amount to anything. And it was pretty funny. I was at a show. I went to a 3PW show. This is before I ever started training or anything with some of my friends. They told me about 3PW in Philadelphia. And I was talking to AJ Styles, who I didn't even really know who that was at the time. And we were just all chatting. And I said, yeah, I was like, it would be awesome if I was a wrestler. And I was like, but I know I'm too short. And he was like, you're not too short. He's like, if you set your mind to it, you can do it. And until that point, I honestly thought, like, I probably was too small to do it. And then I decided to go to wrestling school. So I guess I can somehow thank AJ Styles for, like, getting me into professional wrestling.
Was there anybody during training or at the academy that was particularly harder on you because of this?
Not so much as because I was short. I think that they were harder. Some people were harder on me because I was a girl. And at the time, I was the only girl in my class. Both times when I was in North Jersey and at CCW, there were no other girls there. So I think it was a kind of like, well, you're a girl, but you're here with the boys. So, you know, we're not going to lay it easy on you. So I would say sometimes, like, they were hard on me, but I never complained, because, I mean, it was a decision to go in there and do that. So that's what I did.
Other than AJ Styles being the one that, I guess, lit the fire, was there anybody particularly at training or since then that has not taken under your wing but has gotten you along?
I mean, people come and go. I mean, there's nobody, like, really specifically that has been, you know, with me the whole time just pushing me in wrestling. I want to say, like, my father, as silly as I sound, is like my biggest fan. Like, he loves it, and he's always asking me what I'm doing, and I'm always like, yeah, I wrestled a guy this weekend, yeah, I did this, I did that. So I mean, I have to thank my dad, because he has been like my biggest supporter. But I mean, there's other people, like DJ Hyde has, I mean, people will say so many awful things about him, but he has given me so many opportunities to, you know, work for CZW and do things that I wanted to do that I never thought I would be able to. So I owe a big part of my wrestling career to him too. So.
Okay. So you get through training, they finally come up to you and they say, we're ready to put you into a program. Mm-hmm. What was that program, and what was the feeling that went behind that?
Well, I remember the first time I managed was at, AWA. I can't remember who I managed. It was back in 2005.
Wow.
I went there. I managed somebody, and I took a spine buster. It was my first match, my first time managing, my first time to the ring, and I got beat up by a guy. So I was pretty nervous. I was scared. I had some of my friends, like, come and watch me, and I was terrified. I didn't really know what I was doing and not really confident. And it took some time, but I would say, yeah, it took a while. But, yeah, I was terrified then, but not so much anymore.
So when did you realize, okay, I got this, everything's fine, that I'm over?
I would say when I first started working for CZW, when I had interest in going there. I mean, they still don't have the best reputation, but back then, back in 2006-ish, they weren't really really known for using too many women. They had a reputation of not really liking women, and I wanted to work there. And so many people told me, like, that's not really the best place for women. I don't know about that. Like, they're going to treat you, like, not so good. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go in there, and I'm just going to do it. And if they treat me bad or they throw me out, then it's whatever. And I walked in there, and I talked to John Zandig, and he gave me a job. And the first person that came up to me was Nick Gage and gave me a big hug and introduced himself. And it's pretty funny because he's known as, like, one of the scariest guys around. And he kind of, I guess going back to your original question of taking somebody under their wing, like, he was like, if anybody messes with you, he's like, you just let me know. So, like, nobody ever tried to, but it was pretty, like, comforting and knowing that if somebody did, that I could just, like, walk up to Nick and be like, hey, this guy's messing with me, and it would probably be taken care of. But, yeah, so, I mean, once I started working there, I just didn't really have any doubts in myself. I mean, there's always times where I'll get nervous about something or whatever, but after I started working there, I was like, if you can work for Combat Zone, you can work anywhere, so...
Does that perhaps make, I was going to say, that makes it easier, I guess.
Yes, I tell people that I've never worked there, I'm like, if you work for CZW in front of that crowd, which I believe are the hardest fans to work in front of ever, no matter where you go in the world, and I've talked to people that have traveled all over the world, all over the globe, and they say CZW fans are the hardest to get over with. So if you could work in front of them, you can work in front of anybody. So,
no. Now, what was your first program once you talked to Zandig and you got involved with CZW? Where were you inserted it?
I was originally inserted with Niles Young. He was the junior champion at the time. He was in a program with Sexy Eddie. And they were like feuding for the title. So I kind of got inserted with him. I managed him on a couple of shows and, it was fun. It was fun. And then quickly after that, he kind of like turned on me and they didn't really know what they wanted to do with me at that point. And I was just like, well, I'll do whatever. And then that's when I had joined Blackout with, Black G's and Robbie and Ruckus. And was with them for quite a number of years. So I originally started with Niles and then went with Blackout. So,
well, how was the time with Blackout? Was that like a learning experience, or I mean, when you look back, what was it like?
Oh, it was amazing. It was some of the most fun times I had in my wrestling career. Just those guys were like my brothers. And they looked out for me, and they always, you know, made sure I had something to do, or, you know, like, we always had fun, and just working with them and getting to, you know, be intertwined in some of their feuds, you know, like, Ruckus, you know, feuded with Nick Gage for, like, a while, like, he wrestled him, and, you know, then they were tag champs, so, you know, I got to, like, experience all that, and it was amazing. Like, I'm totally grateful, because they didn't have to allow me to be part of that. Like, I was just, like, this small girl that was, like, green, you know, like Kermit the Frog over here, like, walking into CZW, like, doesn't really know anything. And they could have easily said, like, who's this girl? And they were just like, no, you know, it's cool. And, like, if I did something wrong, which I did, you know, a lot of times they would say, you know, you messed up. This is what you did. And, you know, like, you need to fix that. And so, I mean, I loved it. It was so much fun working with them.
Do you still get any slack backstage from the boys, as they say, or is it pretty much it's mutual around at this point, as long as you've been in the business?
What do you mean slack? Like, do they, like, pick on me, or, like...
Yeah. Beyond ball busting, as I like to
No, I think, if anything, I'm probably one of the biggest troublemakers in that locker room, and people will tell you, like, I went in there, like, trying not to be scared of anyone or anything, and I'm not, and I mean, CZW is such a fun locker room, and we're all really close, and we're like a family there, and yeah, we bust each other's balls and stuff like that, but, like, nothing, I mean, obviously nothing hurtful, or there's no, it's funny, because nobody really has any heat with each other there, so, I mean, we play jokes on each other and stuff, but if anything, I'm busting other people's balls and not the other way around.
Now, getting back to the managing there, do you think that's important, the guys that are with you aren't concerned with that? Because I see a lot of times that sometimes wrestlers don't necessarily like being put with a manager. Do you think it's important that there's some type of friendship? Well, not really friendship, but some type of working agreement is what I'm trying to get at.
I do. I guess it depends on the character. Not like you said, like not everybody really wants to be put with a manager. I don't feel like a lot of people do really need a manager, but I do believe that managers are an asset in a lot of situations, especially like with CZW, we have like a lot of stables right now. And it kind of adds to the storyline. It kind of adds to the matches. I mean, as long as like the manager's not taking too much away, like that's like my biggest pet peeve is like managing. Like people, I mean, they look at managing, but they don't really like see. You know, like they don't think it's like a big deal. A lot of people don't think it's a big deal. But my biggest pet peeve is like a manager that's taking away from the match. Like a match is going on, and there's a manager that's like constantly jaw jacking with the fans. And then it's like, okay, well those fans are not watching. They didn't see those moves in the ring that these, like, you know, that the wrestlers are doing. But, so, I mean, I don't know. I feel like some managers are there and they're not really needed. The wrestler himself or herself doesn't really need that person there. They can talk. They have charisma and all the other stuff. And then there's some people that, I mean, it helps them. Like, they might not be the best talker. They might not be the best in the ring or whatever. And just having that manager there, either being their mouthpiece or just being there, can add to their character and bring them, you know, into their own. Sometimes it makes people feel comfortable having somebody else out there. So I think it's important.
I mean, would you prefer to have a manager?
Oh, yeah. I would prefer. I've had a manager when I've wrestled, I've had John Dahmer be my manager, and it's so fun. Like we tagged at this one place called ACW a couple years ago, and I think we were their tag champs randomly at some point, and like and then we did like singles runs, and I was going for a women's title, and he was going for like a heavyweight title or something, and I would manage him, and he would manage me, and. I liked it. I felt more comfortable if I, like, felt unsure or I forgot something. He was always there or he would help me or, you know, stuff like that. So I enjoy having a manager.
Have you had a bad injury or a scary moment in the ring since you've been in there?
Nothing too harsh. I've had my nose busted a couple times. But, of course, I have a giant Muppet nose, so I can't really, like, you know, it kind of gets in the way sometimes, but nothing too bad. At Cage of Death, I busted up my knee kind of bad, and to this day, it's still giving me problems, so that's probably, like, the longest lingering injury that I've had. But nothing too serious. Scary, I've had a couple moments where Cage of Death, I might have fell off of a scaffold, so, so that was kind of scary, you know, but nothing too life-threatening, I guess.
All right, Chrissy, I do have a caller. It's one of our regular callers.
Sorry ahead of time.
Yeah, but it's John from Rhode Island. John, are you there with us?
I am, yeah.
Okay, did you have a question for Chrissy Rivera?
I did. How are you doing, Chrissy?
Hi, how are you?
Great. My question is, looking at all the big popular indie companies that women have been going to over the years, like, for instance, Shimmer, WSU, and Shine, what do you think would be number one for you to get your go-to work for?
I think probably if I had to pick number one, I would probably pick Shimmer. Shimmer is an amazing women's company. They have, you know, top women's wrestlers in the world working for them. So I would love to work for Shimmer. Not, you know, knocking like Shine or WSU because they're also really good companies, and I know a lot of the girls work for all three. But if I had to pick my number one, I would definitely pick Shimmer. So hopefully one day I will get to go to Shimmer.
And who do you think would be a dream match that you would look forward to have your first match with?
Oh, dream match. Oh, my goodness. I would love to wrestle Mia Yim. I love her. She would probably beat the crap out of me. But I do love Mia. So if I had to pick one person, it would probably be her.
Okay, great.
All right, John. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Thanks for my questions, Christy, and have a great week.
Thank you.
All right. So that was
fairly normal.
Yeah, that was John from Rhode Island. Thank you, John, for calling in.
Yeah.
He seemed very nice.
Well, yeah, he is. I'm surprised he didn't sing you a song. That's the thing.
He usually sings a song.
Oh, he didn't sing me a song?
No. See what I'm talking about?
He did all sing one for Mia. He did sing one for Mia when we had her on. So.
Oh, okay. Okay, John from Rhode Island, we're going to have an issue now if you're listening because you're singing songs for other girls. Mia, you didn't sing me a song. You asked me about Shimmer and WSU, which is fine, but I'm a little hurt that you did not sing me a song.
Oh, if you only knew. If you only knew. Now, getting to the present day in CZW, of course, you are involved with Four Loko. Now, that's, of course, Alex Colon. That's Bandito Jr., I love the guy, I'll just say that, and Azriel.
That's cute.
What's it like working with those guys?
They are amazing. They're awesome. I love them. They're hilarious. They're just great. They will make sure I'm always involved in something, you know. If I have a question, you know, about something specific in a match, that, you know, they're always there to answer my questions. They're some of the easiest people that I have ever, you know, worked with. I'm having a blast working with all them, so.
Now, of course, they're involved in this tag team turmoil, really. Mm-hmm. Bandito and Azriel, I mean, do you have these guys focused to get back to the gold?
Yes, of course. Like, who do you think you're talking to here?
That's true.
we had the tag belts last year. We had them for a while. Obviously, some things did not go our way. Not my fault, obviously. Not going to say it's my fault because it's not. We feuded with Nation of Intoxication for a very long time. I might or might not have pushed Evan Moore off a truck. I'm not going to admit to anything.
He probably deserved it.
Well, if I did, it's because he deserved it.
Right.
So I'm just throwing that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up not coming on top at Cage of Death, and we actually lost the belt. So now this year I am focusing on getting my boys back and getting the tag titles back, and Alex Colon. I have other plans for Alex Colon, so it will be a good year for Four Loko.
Now, John from Rhode Island's back. I'm going to put him back on. Maybe
yes!
He does have a song at this point.
All
hey,
right!
John,
all
right. Do you have a song for Chrissy?
I do. I apologize about that because you never know if there's time running out, like you always say, Dean.
Oh, that's okay. We got all the time in the world for me, John.
Yeah. All right. My name's Chris Christie, come sit on my lap, and I'll sing you some rap, because it's full of crap. Whenever I have on my hat, then I'm off to feed my cat before he takes his nap.
Well, there you go.
What? Bravo. Bravo. Thank you, John from Rhode Island. I'm so flattered.
You're welcome. And I'll give you one last one because it's for your wrestling, for everyone to know.
Okay,
my name is Chris. Oh, no, wait. Here it is. Okay, I'm sorry. I missed it. Oh, here.
No, that's okay. Take your time, John from Rhode Island. It's cool.
Compose.
My name is Christy, who's got the power at every hour. Catch me in the ring, because that's my thing. When you hear a ding-da-ding.
Awesome. Thank you. Both songs are very beautiful. I am very flattered. I hope one day I can download them off iTunes.
Thank you. And have a great week again, and good luck.
Thank you.
You too.
All right. So that was John from Rhode Island. Now, Chrissy, you know for sure what we were talking about.
John from Rhode Island is my favorite person ever right now.
My head hurts.
Now, I did want to bring up, of course, last month, you had a match, an ultra-violent fans bring the food fight.
Yes, I did.
Greg Excellent. Now, wow. Who had that idea to do such a thing?
Well, you know, it was kind of both our ideas. I'm not going to lie. You know, we were, I started, you know, maybe talking a little bit trash on Twitter. So we started going back and forth on Twitter. And I was like, oh, maybe one day this is going to lead to us actually having a match. Greg has been kind of like the Andy Kaufman of CZW. As of late, he's been wrestling all the women, beating them up and all this stuff. So I'm one of the last ones that he has yet to wrestle. So I said, hey, maybe he is, you know, saving me for last. And then it kind of turned into, you know, this food thing. And we were like, hey, you know, how about we do some type of, like, food fight? But, of course, it's CZW, and we want to make it interesting. Fans are not just going to want to see, you know, us maybe throwing a pie in each other's face. How about we do ultra-violent fan, bring the food fight? So that's kind of how that happened. And, yeah, it was very, very interesting. Let's just say I'm never going to look at fruit the same way again after that match. It's changed my life.
Change your life? How so?
Well, there was a banana peel involved at some point. I'm not going to get into that.
A cucumber was involved, too. I saw pictures of that.
Yeah, I gave it to Greg before he gave it to me. I'm not that type of girl. I'm a respectable girl.
At least you guys
respectable.
Took,
you could bring me home to mom.
Turn.
Just want to let you boys know. You could bring me home to mom. So, yeah, I may or may not have shoved a cucumber up Greg. You know.
Yeah,
the backside. I'm not going to curse. This might be PG. I don't know if this is a family-friendly show. I don't know. Linda's running for office again or whatever. But,
sometimes.
Yeah. So, you know, there was a cucumber involved. There was, I might or might not have been, you know, hit with a watermelon at some point. yeah, there was, I know there was a jar of olives. There was a barbed wire Hello Kitty, which was not food, but I have an obsession with Hello Kitty, and had to bring her with me as my manager in the match. So she was involved. So, yeah, there was quite a number of interesting things in our match.
Yeah. So where do you go from here? Because going from that, what's next on your plate?
Well, obviously, well, Greg beat me. I'm not going to go and say, you know, he didn't. I'm going to tell the truth. He did beat me. So my eyes are not off of Greg. I'm still watching him. Maybe eventually we'll get to have a rematch. Right now, I'm just going to try to focus on my boys and Four Loko. Try to focus on getting the tag titles back. Best of the Best is coming up, which is like one of our biggest tournaments, obviously, of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping to get Alex Cologne in that, and hopefully he wins the whole thing. So that's what I'm focusing on right now. I'm going to focus on them before I get myself involved in another food fight, and then I'll have to take the cucumber, and I don't want to do that. So, yeah, that's my plan.
This is a question I like to ask people that worked previous to DJ Hyde buying the company. What differences are there in the company internally, behind the curtain, if you will, between pre-DJ and after DJ?
Well, I want to say there's less people on their toes with DJ, not saying that he's not a scary person when he gets angry, because he is a little scary when he gets very mad, but when working for John, it was always like, I mean, I never had a problem with John. I know people have had their issues or they didn't like working with him. I never had an issue with him. We always got along, but it was always like, hey, what do you need me to do? Okay, powerbomb through a table. Okay, that's cool. Whatever. Okay, bye. You know, like it was kind of just like, okay, this is what you need to do, stuff like that. Working with DJ, I want to say it's a little more lenient. You're not, people aren't as intimidated to like walk up to the boss and say, hey, I'm not cool with this, or hey, I need to talk to you about an angle, or hey, how about this? So, I mean, there is a difference. Both were great to work with, though. I loved working with both of them. So, yeah, that's it.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering, because we have a lot of people that, of course, have been previous and then after. So it's always just strikes my curiosity. Now, Chrissy, where can people follow you on Twitter to follow this crazy life that you live on in CZW and everywhere?
It's not that crazy. Well, on Twitter... You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Jersey Jones. That is J-E-R-Z-E Jones. Obviously, it's an inside joke. I know people ask me, like, what? Why are you Jersey Jones? I could not pick Chrissy Rivera. I could not pick C-Riv, which C-E-Riv, R-I-V, is my name on Facebook. Apparently, that is already taken. I don't know why there is more than one C-Riv in the world, but...
There shouldn't be.
There should not be, and if I find that person, I'm going to send them a very nasty message. So, I had to use something else. So, see Riv on Facebook, Jersey Jones on Twitter. I also have Instagram, which is, I just got into that, so there's that. I'm also Jersey Jones on there, but yeah, that's where you can follow me, and I post random stuff about CZW and Panda Bears and Hello Kitty. So if you enjoy listening about that and making fun of Greg, then you should follow me on all this social network stuff.
Oh, I'm there.
Now, what is coming up for you as far as some bookings, as far as CZW? What do you got coming up?
Well, CZW is running on March 9th. So that will be my next show. That is in Voorhees, New Jersey at the Flyer Skate Zone. So that will be the next show that I will be at, causing some type of trouble.
All right. With Four Loko, obviously. Chrissy, this was wonderful, and you're invited back anytime.
I would love to be back, and as long as John from Rhode Island keeps singing me songs, I will keep coming.
All right. Mm-hmm. You have a great night, Chrissy.
Good night. Thank you, guys.
Through good hell in that, and I don't mean that to me, man. I mean, she went right through the CZW Academy, and she's been through hellacious battles. And I don't mean, you know, this again in a derogatory way, but with her size, she's just kicking ass.
Certainly is. She is an inspiration, I think, for anybody who, for people who say you can't do something, she should be your inspiration. Because
just do it.
Yeah, with her size. You know what? Joey Styles, I never knew that. Joey Styles had a conversation with her and I guess inspired her to do this. So that's amazing. Never give up on your dreams because...
Hey, Jay.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
That's great.
Yeah, so, hey guys, it was an interesting week for Jack Swagger, and we'll talk about it right after this.
Roll another blunt.
The band that I know all the lyrics. La da 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 da. La da da da. La da da da. La da da da. La da da da. I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da da.
So, of course, it came out today that Jack Swagger, after the SmackDown tapings yesterday, was pulled over. And after a search of his vehicle, traces of marijuana were found.
Traces.
Okay, a huge bag of marijuana.
A huge bag of weed was found.
Now, what does this mean? Now, of course, if you go by the wellness policy, it has been issued, I guess it's point 14 on the wellness policy, that someone who runs afoul of the law can be, their contract is null and void. So, are they going to release him? He's, of course, on one of the biggest pushes of his career.
No kidding. I mean, he just came back. Here's a push. You work with... Maybe it was the Dutch thing that got him going on the weed.
I don't know. Omega, how do you feel about it? We'll start with you. Of course, Jack Swagger, just coming back. He's on a roll, wins the Elimination Chamber, picks up a win over D-Bry on Raw, and now he faces the Rob Van Dam treatment.
Yeah, he does. And thanks for the intro, by the way. I'm here.
Yes, Omega Squad, you can find him at Omega Squad, is here.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know what? Rob Van Dam never got caught driving like an a-hole.
But he got caught.
He got caught.
Yeah. But I don't say he's right. I didn't say
he got
right.
Pulled over, right, with Sabu, right?
Yeah.
Same difference.
I know a guy that has Sabu's blood on his car.
Yeah, so do I. But Omega, getting back to the point.
Boneheaded. It's the only thing I can think of. I mean, how do you, these are, when you're on the biggest push of your career, why do you take risks like that? You know, what possible reason can you have to be doing that, taking marijuana, to be speeding just in general? Why do you do anything to risk your push? I mean, it's just silly. And what,
your possible employment.
Yeah.
Well, the in and out period in the WWE as it is, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Your spot. Not talking about a dog spot or a liver spot. Your spot can be taken over the next day. I would do my damnedest not to screw that up. Period.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think a normal person normal people can't get away with that kind of stuff.
No.
You know, especially if you're in a public corporation.
Look at Jeff Hardy.
That kind of stuff, maybe Jeff Hardy. But you're in a public corporation. I mean, in normal areas, people get disciplined pretty severely for these type of things.
Well, certainly.
It certainly kills your career in a lot of settings. And to be in this high-profile push, to be risking WrestleMania, this isn't some this isn't a one of the multi the B shows.
This wasn't Armageddon. This was WrestleMania.
Yeah. This is
the opening match of WrestleMania.
Absolutely. And you got, you know, they got, you know, Zeb Colder.
Yeah.
They've got push, they've got media attention on this. Major media attention on this angle because of this this character. And to do something that stupid is just mind-boggling. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if I'm WWE, I'm certainly pissed, and I'm looking for a way to get out of this.
Now, I was going to say, if you're Vince, do you continue the...
Oh, it's done. It's over.
I've got an idea for it.
I was going to say, do you still have the match, and then, okay, dude, you're done. You're done. You're getting beat. You're jobbing. You're going home.
I mean, I think that I think what you have here, this is me fantasy booking. You find some way to say to have Swagger put his WrestleMania match on the line against someone, whoever it is. I don't even care. Have him lose it, and then have Dolph Ziggler cash in his money in the bank to save the day. That's just my opinion, but
yeah, fans would certainly be behind that because how many people are really behind Swagger? I mean, he's a heel, but I mean, people have been saying for years Swagger is this guy on the cusp,
yeah,
of greatness. Mm-hmm. He finally had his chance, and now this. So you go with Plan B. You put Ziggler in that spot.
Yeah,
I like it.
Or I could see going with somebody like Jericho.
I've heard that too. I've heard that thrown around that you could put Jericho in that.
But you got to think Jericho. Jericho doesn't even have to win.
Jericho
just puts up Alberto Del Rio over, makes him look like a star, and you go to Mexico.
Yeah,
you know,
I start pushing
that. I mean, they have options here, and I think that's what Swagger has failed to realize. They are not nearly as backed into the corner as if this were to happen to somebody like John Cena.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, Swagger, they finally got behind. He came back. They finally get behind him, and they're just going to say, well, this is why we didn't back you before.
But not only that, you're with somebody else working an angle with him, and you've put him technically in jeopardy of his job.
Well, yeah. Let's think of Dutch Mantel here. Finally comes back. He has a spot, and now it might be ruined because of someone, you know, enjoying some recreational drugs.
And I'm just saying, I wouldn't want to piss Dutch Mantel off.
Well, I mean, how do you guys feel about marijuana? Is this that big a deal? I mean,
no,
it's just marijuana.
Marijuana by itself is not a big deal. I don't really care if you're using it, but the fact of the matter is, it's illegal, and it's not whether or not I agree with that marijuana smoking it should be illegal. It's the fact that it is, and the fact that you work for a public company.
100%.
Fair enough. Good point. I can't argue with that.
I agree 100%. That's basically the gist of what I was going to say. On top of the fact that with the company, you're also idolized by children.
Yes.
Whether or not I think weed is bad, and I don't.
You know,
you're still influencing children.
Oh yeah, period. but you gotta think they're walking a fine line with the racist angle they're running.
Well, they're walking a fine line as it is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so is marijuana really that much worse than saying all Mexicans should leave?
No, because if he was high, he'd be like, I like everyone.
Yeah, I mean.
Now, I of course made a joke saying that they're going to do a Van Damme to him, but let's go back when Van Damme and Sabu were pulled over. This was approximately a month after he beat John Cena at the ECW pay-per-view that they had at the time. Wins the title. He's on top of the world. He's the ECW champion and the WWE champion. Within a week, loses both titles. One to Edge, one to Big Show, and really out of the company at that point. Do you see the same thing happening? The only good news I can see out of this is we have a chance at Swagger on the downward spiral.
No. Why?
Why not?
Why bother?
What do you mean, why bother? It's Jack Swagger.
Well, I mean, you know.
Talk about pot and that it should be legal.
Let me say this. I mean, you compare it to somebody like Tully.
Okay.
Well, we're not going to get Tully all the time. I mean.
No. No.
You just mean somebody that on the downward spiral.
But I do want to make it clear that he is coming back on the show at some point, so don't go there. He making fun of you about not watching his matches. My point was, I mean, the man had a six-figure deal signed with WCW. He's going to go back. He's on a roll. And he gets busted to the drug test. And thus ending any chance you had. It's in the same situation. As somebody as high profile or as quote-unquote low profile as Jack Swagger was, you made a big boo-boo.
Well, certainly.
You know, I argue that, you know, going back to RVD, I argue that Jack Swagger is nowhere near over as RVD, and look what happened to RVD.
Exactly.
Oh, no, that's the point. Like,
yeah.
You go to somebody. You go as
and
big
your,
as
yeah.
You go as big as Tully. You were still no. We don't need you. We don't want you.
Well, there's always, you know, no matter how important you think you are to a company, there's always somebody who can step in, whether they're as good as you, whether they, because of course the Four Horsemen were never the same after Tully was done with wrestling. But yeah, Paul Roma. But there's always somebody that can fill a spot, whether they fill it as good as the person that they're replacing.
Lex Luger
could be questionable, but no, Luger was all right. As a horseman, I thought Luger was fine.
Luger should just never talk.
Anyway, I do want to bring up another point before our next guest comes on. I'm going to play something happened after UFC 121. So we're going back through the mist of time. And here's something. And maybe what I want to talk about afterwards is maybe something could happen with this.
Ariel Helwani post-fight at UFC 121, where Cain Velasquez just beat Brock Lesnar, and we're here with The Undertaker. Sir, what are your thoughts on what we just witnessed?
I'm a little bit shocked, you know. I thought Brock was going to come out strong like he did. I thought Cain's chances would be better if they went in, you know, the fourth or fifth round. I'm a little bit shocked. I thought Brock might have got to him early, but... you know what? Cain's a hell of a fighter, and he did a hell of a job.
Do you think, considering the size difference, that he'd be able to manhandle him like that?
No, I didn't think so. I think Brock's strength and size would overmatch him. I thought he would have to go into a cardio battle, and I'm actually very surprised.
It's almost like you're at a loss for words there.
You want to do it?
It was Brock Lesnar right there. What did you just say to him?
It's kind of a personal thing. You know, I think maybe he needs to, I think he needs to train a little harder.
Are you guys cool?
Personal.
Who are you rooting for tonight?
You know what? I got a background with Brock, but, you know, that just showed you something right there.
Are you a fan of this sport?
I'm a big-time fan.
You're one of the first guys to actually introduce MMA to pro wrestling, the gloves, the go-go plata.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big fan. And I like to, the things that I can bring from MMA into what we do. Obviously, there's not many people prepared for it, you know. And, I'm a big fan.
Perhaps 20 years ago, if this sport was as popular as it is today, you think you would have done it?
Safe bet. Real safe bet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a little late in the game for me to start now, but 20 years ago, I'd be all over it.
Well, thank you so much for the time, sir. Very much appreciate
thanks
it.
Very much.
Now, of course, that was Undertaker at UFC 121 after the Brock Lesnar loss to Cain Velasquez when Velasquez won the title. Now, my question is, obviously, do you think that they could use this and set this up? Brock against... Undertaker, WrestleMania.
I was waiting for you to finish the question. Could they use it? I think they could. Will they? Probably. Hopefully, because I wanted to see that match.
You think?
Yeah. I mean, now I think Brock would eat him alive.
Well, that's my concern. A beat up. Well, we're talking about a WWE wrestling match here, right? We're not MMA.
Okay. Oh, God, no, not MMA.
No, we're talking about a fake. We're talking about a
but we're
fake
still
title.
Talking. But we're still talking about a 47-year-old
that's
guy.
I mean, that's where I'm going.
That's where I'm going with that. There's no way.
Yeah, that's where I'm concerned with a guy who is well known to be beat up.
Yeah.
In Taker taking on a guy with a very physical style in Brock Lesnar that I'm not sure is that. You know, on the scale of safe wrestlers, is probably on there.
They have wrestled before. Of course, this is 2003, before Brock did anything. They were in a great Hell in a Cell match at the time. And you just don't think in 2000, that's 10 years now, but you don't think in 2013 they could do it?
I think the mystique of a Taker-Brock match would sell pay-per-views, certainly. But, you know, given... If I'm thinking about Taker personally, you know, can he take that kind of a match, that physical style, that brutal style of a match from Brock in that last match? And honestly, does Lesnar need the rub? Probably not.
And of course, you would have to think that Lesnar would just lose that match. Do you think the better match then is Lesnar Triple H?
I was about to say, at this point, I'd rather see Triple H Lesnar.
Yeah, I would rather see Triple H or Lesnar or someone younger who can.
No offense to The Undertaker. No offense to Mark.
Absolutely not. But what the reality of his physical state is really the only thing holding me back from saying book it, you know?
So is there anybody besides Brock that Undertaker can take on? I know there's a lot of chatter about CM Punk, possibly.
I think CM Punk would be a logical choice. I'd like to see him, you know, maybe Daniel Bryan, potentially, or someone younger, someone, you know, who on the way up, potentially, if they want to give someone a chance to break the streak and really do it. If they don't want to break the streak, yeah, then maybe put him up against a really big name and say, this is Taker's last match. Give it to someone, you know, at that point I say maybe you give it to Cena and make as much money as you can.
Well, see, the strange thing about Undertaker, he's always said he never wanted to have, like, a final match. He never wanted to go out into the sunset like that. He just wanted to kind of fade away. Do you think he just fades away? There's no WrestleMania match. People just talk about it, and it just doesn't come to fruition this year or ever? That maybe last year's Triple H match, that was it, and that's why they had the hug at the end? I mean, three icons. Think about it. Three icons of a certain generation. The Attitude Era. You had Undertaker, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels embrace on the ramp, and you think that was it?
It's possible.
Because I've heard him on record say he didn't want to have a big deal. It was after the Ric Flair thing when they did that whole send-off for Flair.
Yeah.
He went on record and said he didn't want to go out like that.
I remember him saying that. You know, things change. Who knows? Does he really want to go out like – does he really want to go out like that? Maybe. It was appropriate enough way to go out. You know, I guess I always would think that he would take the road of, you know, all the good wrestlers go out on their back if you're going to go out that.
Yeah.
If you're going to retire, you go out on your back. You put someone over. You put the next person over. Who is that? I don't know. I mean,
Jack
Swagger. There you go. Jack Swagger against Undertaker for WrestleMania.
Although I think Taker is the one exception. You can let him go out on his feet.
I would say that too. Certainly, well, Flair didn't go out on his feet. Well, he's still around, so
I was going to say he didn't retire.
He retired, but.
I don't have a problem either way with it. If Taker doesn't want to do another match at all, ever. And that's fine. He went out appropriately. If he wants to go out, even if he wants to go out with one more match and win, I'm good with that too.
Well, speaking of gentlemen that, well, they didn't fare too well over the weekend. Just in America, and we're going to talk to him. Hopefully, he's in good spirits tonight. Last time he was a little depressed. He was on the cliffs of Dover. Let's see.
Oh, where's America? Land that I love. Stay beside me, hang my head. Will the night be the life of a boy? From the mountain, through the prairie, through the ocean, right before.
All right, joining us now is a man. You could say he's a man on an island. He was abandoned by his leader, Jake Bishop. I am joined by the former United States champion of New Moon Rising Wrestling, just in America. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Dean, Omega, how are you guys?
Doing good.
Yeah, doing great.
That's fine. I don't like you anyway.
I didn't ask you, Cujo.
It's my show.
Listen, Dean, let me clarify something first. You spoke I'm assuming what you saw.
I did see
but
it.
But I saw the tape, and I saw Jake coming back. I saw Jake pulling me out of the ring. And due to that, bonds have never been stronger. We're good. You know, the Meat Society is still good.
Are you trying to be obtuse, sir?
Listen, Dean, my syllables. Two syllables, I'll understand the word.
Obtuse. O-B-T-U-S-E. Obtuse.
I'm just saying, I mean, you can't be that ignorant to the facts.
The only tag team that's stronger right now is Fusion DS.
Well, they've never been stronger.
No.
And that's a fact. But I do have to say, and it takes a real man to admit when he's wrong. And
you were wrong.
Shut up, Cujo. Though I was pinned, I was not beaten by Mr. Martinez and Brawley. No, I was beaten by myself. Because I put LJ ahead of those guys. I was thinking of LJ. And then, you know, Mr. Punisher got a sneak attack on me.
But you're trying to get away from the fact that Jake Bishop abandoned you. He did. Why was he by the commentary table? Who was he trying to get out there to help the situation? These are the hard questions I'm trying to...
Obviously not those idiots, the Untouchables, who weren't there.
Yeah, what happened with them? Where were they?
They were from what I heard, they were stuck in snow. But I know the truth. Truth is, Don Warren was in charge of taking care of their flight plans, and he screwed it up. They called him Connecticut.
Yeah, that doesn't seem too far from the truth, actually.
Yeah.
So you're going to blame Don Warren for you getting beat, too?
No.
By extension.
Cujo, did you not hear earlier in the interview on Dean's show when I said I blame myself for that?
Okay.
Because I put LJ ahead of the match that I was currently in.
Yeah, sometimes I don't listen to what you talk about.
Will you stop
it? You might learn a thing or two about a thing or two.
He generally doesn't listen anyway, so.
What?
You don't take it personally.
I didn't hear you.
What?
Huh? What?
Exactly.
Now, Justin, looking ahead, of course, coming up, I still think there's unfinished business, quite frankly, within the Me Society, and I think you're just trying to get away from the hard questions, the hard line of questioning I am bringing to you. But since you don't want to talk about it, since you want us to believe that everything's okay, then let's move on.
Why wouldn't everything be okay? It wasn't my fault that we lost that the Me Society lost the ladder match. It wasn't Jake's fault that the Me Society lost the ladder match.
It was Dean's fault.
It wasn't my fault. It was Don Warren's fault.
Dean and I already worked that out. Dean and I are good.
Okay.
Dean and I are good. It was the Untouchables' fault. Just like at the over the weekend, they didn't show up. They didn't show up to Raw for it all, and that's why Tank was so easily able to climb up that ladder.
I agree. Truer words have never been said. Now looking forward to the Ides of March, perhaps
yes.
The so aptly named Ides of March for those who are Shakespeare fans. So looking ahead to the Ides of March, you have LJ Cruz. Now, this is a first-time ever match. What do you have in store for Mr. VIP?
I have a punch in the face. I've got a couple other things. You know, some people were claiming that I tried to, and, you know, one of them being the master official, trying to claim that I tried giving Mr. Berwick brass knuckles to punch LJ. Why would I do that when this upcoming month I'm going to punch him in the mouth myself?
Well, lots of other people saw that happen.
Saw what happened.
Saw him bring
yes,
in
exactly.
the brass knuckles. So, Dean, be real.
I am being real.
Be the broadcast
I,
journalist that you are.
I'm just not sure what you were referencing.
Dean is not only a world-renowned broadcast journalist, he's also an investigative reporter. Dean would have looked into this thing if I know if we're talking about the same Dean.
You know what? I did my own investigating, too. I watched what happened. My eyes saw.
Your eyes are deceiving you.
All I saw was L.J. Cruz had brass knuckles. That's what I saw. I don't know.
Yep. How did they get into the ring? Trust him.
I don't know what you're talking about, Dan.
Okay. Fine.
I really don't. So the Ides of March, you have... Now, what about Jake? I don't think anything was on his plate. What's up with Jake coming up at the Ides of March?
As far as I know, Jake and I, we have a few words to the Untouchables. Maybe, if they're smart, we'll apologize for making us lose the brawl for it all, and then things can be better. We can go out to TGI Fridays afterwards, have a good laugh. Maybe get a couple cocktails, you know?
Hopefully it's not Applebee's.
No, Applebee's will throw you out after 11:30. I have to go. Do you want anything? Because I really have to go. It's not like you're not paying me.
Yeah.
Jackasses.
Oh, Applebee's. So, Ides of March.
Yeah.
Untouchables, are they booked for anything? Do they get their rematch with Fusion DS, perhaps?
Apparently Don Warren doesn't give rematches. Otherwise, I would have easily, you know, beaten Mike Reed last week after I punched him in the mouth and laid him on the ground. Jake would have forced Tank to be there. Tank didn't even show up.
I don't know what happened.
What kind of a
there?
Champion is that?
I have don't ask me why Tank wasn't there. I have no idea.
I have a question, if I'm allowed to ask of you, Mr. America.
You address me correctly, so you may proceed.
Thank you. In that match, in the Brawl for All ladder match, Mike Reed was part of the team that won the titles. But if you saw this past Saturday, he kind of made a turn, I guess, for the better. I mean, are you doing any scouting for the Mises Society?
We don't have time. For liars and thieves in the Mises Society, okay? I'll let Slim Burgundy straighten Mike Reed out, get him on the proper path, okay? So you were there, you heard the speech, him, you know, crying and pissing and moaning about how, oh, I don't know whoever won, even if I got the case, then Tank would have gotten the belt. Well, you know what? Maybe you should have been better. Maybe you should have stopped being a thief. And you should have been picked as the heavyweight guy, Don Warren.
He is a thief.
He is. He stole my championship. He stole Robert's championship. And I'm sure he's stealing something from somebody else right now.
And he steals excitement from the crowd like no one else. He certainly does. Now, I lost my train of thought after that. Now, oh no! Did we just lose Dan? We lost Dan there for a second. Oh no!
Where did Joe go?
I don't know. We lost him. I think perhaps he's upset, Justin. I don't know.
Or he went to Friendly's to go get a sundae.
It's like it's possible.
It is possible. No, he's working out hard. He's lost 5% of his body weight.
That's impressive when you lose a whopping 15 pounds.
Well, you know, that's not funny, Justin. Now,
you did the math, didn't you?
I did do the math. Now, Ides of March, we also have another exciting match coming up. Mike Madoff taking on Sunday Steve Zaff. Your thoughts on that one?
It's going to be a blockbuster. I'll tell you what. You know, the trainer's trainer, Sunday Steve, Mr. Zaff, this man he's been training hard. He's been, you know, flipping the tires. He's been jumping up and down on the steps. He's been doing what he has to do. Tireless Steve Zaff is the man that's going to, I think, is going to go on and beat, you know, the man who says he lives on an island, as you said about me.
Yeah, I mean, this is like you said, I think it's a barn burner. It's going to be
absolutely.
It's going to be something else. So we know a few matches, and of course, Tank taking on Mike Reed. So title for title.
Who? The Thief? Yeah, the Thief, Mike Reed. Thanks to some negotiating by Slim Burgundy there.
Yeah, I mean, do you like the new attitude that Mike Reed showed, exhibited there? A little fire. Like I said on commentary that night, I said the only thing that was lacking was a fire in his belly, and now he has it.
Well, he may have that, but as these people know, he's not there for them. You know, they don't understand that I am actually there for them, unlike that dirtneck. I'm actually the real America. I stand for, you know, working the American things, like working, not living on Social Security, my taxes going to good things, unlike, you know, people like Mike Reed and the dirtneck and Tank Tolan, who believe in, oh, well, let's have the government give me everything. That's what these guys stand for.
Yeah, I can see that. You have very good points.
Yeah. Well, if you're an idiot.
Damn.
What?
Welcome back, Cujo.
Thank
Welcome
you.
Welcome back.
Yeah, I came back. You're still talking. It's crazy.
No, I'm dropping knowledge.
Oh. Oh. No curb stomping?
No, I don't do that. What do you think I'm from? What do you think I'm from? The inner city?
No, only real idiots do that. And then try stand. Never mind. I'm sorry.
Oh my.
Truth be told, I love you, Justin America.
I'm sure you do. And this just brought this that comment just brought this interview to a whole new level.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I'm a loser. I'm a loser.
I don't know where that came from.
You
now.
Have the other one about rattling things?
No, I don't have that one. But anyway, moving right along.
Right along.
Eyes of March, of course, is coming up March 16th. That's coming from the Proving Grounds. The Me Society, I think, is on shaky ground. I don't think you want to answer the questions. I think there's unfinished business. But you got LJ Cruz that night, first time ever. And I think we're all excited about it. Wrap it up in a nice bow for us, Justin.
Well, a nice bow would be the Me Society is stronger than ever. Stronger than Fusion DS.
I don't know.
Stronger than Slim Burgundy's belt.
Stronger than highly entertaining wrestlers?
Sure.
I'm sorry.
And much stronger than Dan's willpower.
The other Dan, right?
No, I'm talking about you.
Why?
The one who walked out of his own show to go eat some Hostess cakes.
I was hungry. You know, seriously, when you're hungry, you're hungry.
Hey, he has to keep his sugar up.
I do have to keep my sugar up. It's not high enough.
Oh, Justin, it's always a pleasure.
And now I'm going to go because I need a beer. Because, you know.
Go drown your tears.
Yeah. Why don't you go cry when you lose another match this month?
Oh,
I don't cry.
Blah, 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 blah. We can cut him off now. We hang up on Rough Deck. Can we hang up on him?
No, because Justin America is
an
exquisite guest.
American icon. Only in the ghetto.
What?
That makes no sense.
It makes perfect sense. You're American icon only in the ghetto.
I don't get it. Justin, I apologize for Dan.
I'm sure it's a hip hop reference. I don't listen to hip hop. I'll have to ask Jake about that one.
Are we going real for a second there?
Anyway.
Is this like the Snickers commercials where he starts making sense and after he gets the Snickers he feels better?
Hold on. Let me take a bite of this hoagie for a second.
Yeah.
I hope so. Now, Justin, you have a...
It makes sense!
We'll talk. It didn't, Dan.
It did!
Flaming fire.
God!
Justin, we'll talk very soon.
God damn it.
Oh, where's America? When there
All right, we're back. And apparently Dan's seriously pissed. Why, Dan?
I'm leaving the show to become a stand-up comedian.
You're above average.
Usually when we type something in chat, you're not supposed to repeat it on air. I'm just saying.
Well, Dan, I want to get to the heart of it. I want to know why you're...
talk about it! Let's go! Move on!
Fair enough.
God.
Fair enough.
You're playing on my... Never mind.
It's an entirely different plane that your mind works on, Dan.
He's an
American icon in the ghetto. What the hell does that mean?
That means they only heard of him in the ghetto. That means only the Americans in the ghetto know who he is.
How does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense!
If you have to explain it that much, Dan.
Okay, it makes sense, but it wasn't funny.
That's better. That's fine.
Okay.
And it was funny.
I'm glad we could come together in mutual agreement.
I don't know. Omega, it's time.
Yes. Play the music.
Stop talking over it.
No. It's my thing.
Shut up. Good. Talk over it now, Megan.
All right. We had a UFC event over the weekend. UFC on Fuel 7. Omega, I don't have Fuel, but I do know the results.
You do. Nobody with Comcast has Fuel.
Yeah. Comcast.
Stupid Comcast.
You got your Comcast. You don't have Fuel.
Exactly. Now, Omega, of course... there was a interim title fight. We talked a lot about interim titles and how they're not defended, but hey, it happened this week.
It did, and it happened in very, very, I'm not going to call it spectacular fashion, but I would say that was Henan Barao's coming out party.
Right.
He took some, he had, there's Michael McDonald was probably his hardest challenge to date. McDonald was aggressive. He was adaptable. He had Barao in a little bit of trouble in spots, but Barao, showing his championship credentials, managed to stay the course, adapt to McDonald's strategy, and eventually in the fourth round take him down and get the arm triangle choke for the win.
All right, so what do you think when the champion, the I guess the real champion, in quotations, comes back? Do you think that he has enough to fend off the challenge at this point?
I think that Barao is the uncrowned bantamweight champion. I really don't think that Cruz – I like Cruz. Cruz is a good fighter. I mean, don't get me wrong, you don't get to be champion by being a slouch, but I think Barao has all the tools. He's got dynamic striking. He's got submission ability. He's fast. He's got everything that you need to be a force in mixed martial arts. And I think that he will, at such a young age, he's going to be a champion for a while, I think. If you know, and then when Cruz comes back, you know, Cruz coming off that long layoff, those injuries, is he going to be the same fighter?
No.
That's the big question. And he, not that he's an old guy. He's not young. He's still in his 20s. But, he's... You know, those kind of injuries, having two surgeries right in a row, that's got to take something out of you.
Yeah, I definitely do agree with that. Now, of course, we had Cub Swanson defeated Dustin Poirier. What do you think of that one?
That was a good fight. A very good fight from two really game fighters. Was a very lots of different things happened in this fight. There was lots of all the things you want to see in a mixed martial arts fight. Takedowns, striking, submission attempts. It was very, very good fight for Cub Swanson, who cements himself as a contender. And Poirier, he was game the whole way. He got beat, but I mean, he was fighting back the entire way, and you know, until Swanson started getting him down in later rounds, he was managing to be frustrating for Swanson. I mean, the judges put it 30-27 twice and 29-28 in favor of Swanson. I can see that going both ways. I could have seen giving Poirier a round in that one, but Swanson looks good. He looks very, very good on the ground, on the feet. Whether or not he's going to be a champion, I don't know, but he's got the skills to at least put up a challenge.
Now, was there anything else on the card? Because there really weren't too many names in there. Anybody else on the card that you saw as a standout?
The problem with the rest of the card was the rest of the card wasn't very good, wasn't very exciting. Lots of decisions, lots of kind of boring fights. There was the guys we talked about last week. Jimmy Manoa picks up a win because Cyril Diabate gets injured, so he wins based because Diabate couldn't answer the bell in the second round. Gunnar Nelson did beat Jorge Santiago. He looked okay. I expected him to look better. I expected him to win this fight via a finish, and that didn't happen. Couldn't seem to get Santiago put away. He still won. He still picked up the majority of the rounds. He needs to step up in competition, but I'm less high on him than I was. And James Tahuna, his fight with Ryan Jimmo, he was actually almost got beat in the first round. It was a very good comeback to come back to take the decision. I wasn't thrilled with the fight, but it was a good effort. And then Matt Riddle got absolutely he got robbed against Che Mills because that was Riddle's fight the whole way. He won. He wins, but anybody giving Mills the scorecard was ridiculous.
Yeah, it looks like 29-28, 29-28 for Mills, and then 30-27. That's really big disparity.
That's a bad card. He won. It wasn't very exciting, but the UFC is very high on Riddle. He's had some good fights, but not lately. I don't know if it's a step up in competition. He's not been able to get some finishes or not, but we'll see how he does there. The rest of the card, nothing really to talk about. A lot of the guys that lost have since been released from the UFC.
I was going to bring that up. Now, 16 guys released. Among them, the biggest name, I would say, is John Fitch.
That is crap. That Fitch gets released after losing to Damian Maia is insane.
I don't think Dana White was ever too high on Fitch.
No, and I get it. But if you're trying to present a sport to cut a top 10 fighter coming off a win, a loss against another top 10 fighter is just insane. If you're trying to say, if you want to say that you have the best fighters in the UFC and you cut a guy who's consensus top 10.
He was 1-2-1 in his last four.
But look at who he's lost to. He has three losses on his record. He's lost to GSP. He's lost to a number one contender in Johnny Hendricks.
Yeah.
And he's lost to Damian Maia, who is a great fighter, who is, what, number six probably on the rankings in the UFC? Was a very good fighter at middleweight. So I don't see a bad loss on those three. I mean, you could argue that the Hendricks KO was a bad loss, I guess, but Hendricks knocks a lot of people out, and Hendricks is good. So to say that Fitch, I don't understand it other than, to your point, Dana White really doesn't like him as a fighter. He's not a very exciting fighter. I get it.
Yeah.
But if you're there, not every fighter is exciting, and you still need, if you're still saying that the best fighters are in the UFC, then Fitch still deserves to be there. The only thing I get is probably at this point in his career, Fitch has a very high price tag.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe this is just a ploy to get his contract down. You know, let him kick him out, have him fight, I don't know, go to Bellator or something, and then maybe when he's ready to come back, get him at a cheaper rate. That's the only thing I could think of. But I have concerns about kicking out a fighter of that caliber strictly for money. I got to believe the UFC with the Fox deal, with the pay-per-view revenues, makes plenty of money. They're not paying fighters that are not champions and not huge draws. They're not paying them tons of money. I'm not saying that Fitch is not well paid, but I don't think as a percentage of overall revenues that he was getting some insane amount that necessarily warranted cutting him. When you have plenty of fighters in the UFC that have much poorer records,
yes,
that still have a job in the UFC, and they make money too. Conceivably, if you're looking to cut salaries, there are other people you could cut.
I would agree with that. We're going to talk a little bit more about that after we have our next guest on, of course. Blanky Productions. Dan, what do you know about Blanky Productions?
Sorry, I was on. I was being quiet. Blanky Productions is a independent, I guess not short, but yeah, they do shorts, but they do fan films based in the world of sci-fi, fantasy, comic books, and their last series was Deadpool, and they have a lot of projects up on their website, blinky-productions.com.
Okay, so we're going to have, I guess, the creator, the producer, Chris Notarelli. He's going to be
our
guest.
He is Blinky.
Yeah, he's Blinky. We're going to have him on right after this. So it is with great pleasure I introduce Hell in a Cell Talk Radio to Chris Notarelli. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We are doing well as well. I wanted to start off. Now, most filmmakers, they always wanted to do this. They always wanted to – I mean, were you a kid like Steven Spielberg with a camera that your grandfather bought or something of that nature and went around and just started? Is that how this all started?
Not at all. Not whatsoever.
Oh, okay. Well, how did it start then?
I actually read Steven Spielberg's biography when I was a kid because I had to do a report on him, and I read about how, you know, he had a camera and, you know, George Lucas had a camera. Everybody had a camera growing up. I remember when I was a kid and I asked for a camera, my parents got me a Tyco RC camcorder that only functioned when you plugged into the VCR. So my cinematic days were limited to about a 4-foot-long cord. So that didn't really work out for me. What I did was I just had everything in my head. I was drawing. I was sculpting. I started writing in high school. And I had superheroes and whatnot that I created and everything like that. But I didn't realize that I wanted to make movies until the end of high school into college, because I didn't know how to explain what it was that I wanted to do. I always knew that I wanted to tell stories, but I didn't have the tools to my advantage. I would just draw and write, and I realized that wasn't enough. I tried making a comic book in high school. I even tried doing some home videos, so whatever. Ultimately, what it came down to was when I hit college and I finally got the equipment that I needed, I said, hey, this is what I want to do. This is easy. This is fun.
Now, when you first started writing, I mean, you were writing your own stuff, or were you writing based on other superheroes that were already established at this point?
Well, it was kind of sort of both. In high school, I was creating my own stories because that interested me a lot. I was doing a lot of horror-themed stuff and creating my own superheroes. But my first real movie that I did was essentially a contest. It was a fan film contest for Wizard Magazine in 2004. I ended up doing a short film called The Baby Punisher. It was only about a minute and a half. And I did that for myself. I didn't get anywhere with it. And then I had seen previously, in 2003, Batman Dead End, where it was Batman versus Predator and the Punisher. And I said that was a really cool idea. They had a lot of production value in it. And I saw the kind of press that that short film was getting. And I said, I really think that if I want people to give a crap about my work, my original work, I would need to do something that already had a built-in fan base. Thus, I started with a fan film idea, but I said, I don't want to do, you know, your typical fan film. I don't want to do something about Batman or something about Superman because, well, everybody could do that. Anybody could do that. I want to do something that hasn't really been seen before. So I did my first real fan film, which was The Nightmare Ends on Halloween, which had Freddy versus Michael, Jason, Leatherface, and Pinhead all in one movie. That's what I've been trying to do ever since, is do things that you don't normally see but still have their own built-in fan bases.
Now, I also see sometimes you use a lot of the same actors. How do you find people to take this ride with you?
A lot of different ways. I started out traditionally on Craigslist before it became the filthy version of Times Square from the 70s. Back in the glory days when Craigslist actually meant something, I was on there, and I had met some people, I had auditioned, and then I moved onwards to NY Castings and Model Mayhem, and that's usually where I predominantly find people now. And the actors that I've found and I've worked with over the years, I believe, honestly, they choose to work with me because I give them stuff that I would assume they're proud of. So that's why they've always continued to come with me each time and do a new project, because I give them something that they're happy with, that they want to see, or that they like to show their friends, and that's something that they could put on their reel that they don't feel embarrassed that they ever did, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. The first film you did you have any problems getting it off the ground, financing for it, or is it something that came pretty easy?
If you're talking about The Nightmare Ends on Halloween, I presume.
Yes, sir.
That was an interesting thing. That came about in a very weird way. I had already done two movies. I had done a short film called Axe Massacre, which was an original horror movie, and that wasn't getting any press on my website. And this is all, by the way, before YouTube came around. So it was very hard to network yourself online with video. You had to get people to go to your website to watch your stuff because there was no communal place to screen that. And then I had done a work for hire, and that was an action superhero movie. What happened was, I think randomly, somehow, I had posted up on a casting website called extrasformovies.com, and this guy had messaged me from it, and he's like, I'm from North Carolina, and I can do a really good Freddy Krueger impression. And I go, okay, I'm listening. So we started talking, and he told me how he did this amazing impression, and ultimately I said, well, listen, you're really far away, but if you were to come up here, I had an idea that I wanted to do. I'd be willing to do the idea if you came up here, took care of yourself, and we did the project. So he agreed. He stayed in Jersey for 5 days. What we ended up doing was the whole movie, I think, cost about $400 total, and that was, at the time, very expensive for me. I had borrowed equipment from my college. I had started purchasing costumes, you know, the Freddy sweater, the claw that I had customized, the mask and whatnot. And I just built everything from the ground up. We shot for 5 days, and we did have some problems with one of our actors who bailed. Like, he shot for one day. The second day, he just disappeared off the face of the earth, and we had to replace him with the actor that was also doing Freddy. The guy playing my Michael Myers, in the fight scene with Freddy is also my Freddy Krueger. Now, let me tell you, do you have any idea how hard it is on your third outing to do a fight scene where a guy is literally fighting himself as two different characters?
Wow.
No.
Yeah, that was a real editing challenge on my part, but it came through and it worked out, and I put the video up, and it did pretty well. Ultimately, then YouTube came around the following year, and I finally came onto YouTube in 2005, and the video has been, you know, steadily gaining a lot of press over the years. I did a sequel in 2011, which I honestly believe trumps the original version. And so, yeah, that's basically where I was at with that video.
Now, all these, the amount of material you're pumping out on a yearly basis is staggering. I mean, do you literally work on one movie, then the next one, or you work on several things at the same time, or how do you do all that?
Little column A, little column B. What I do is I have a lot of projects in the mix. I usually try to just do one at a time, or I plan a bunch at the same time, and then I just shoot them consecutively. There are very few times that I spend one day shooting one project and another day shooting another project and then go back and forth. That's only recently with a couple of features and due to schedules and whatnot, but I'm pretty thorough. I think the most projects I ever put out in one year was, I think, 14 short films.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Jeez. I mean, the quality of the work, it looks like you're actually trying. You know what I mean?
I was really proud last year. Starting in January of 2012, I was putting on a new short film a week, and I did that for 5 weeks straight. And that's where I put out some of my best stuff. I put out Host, Roses, Superhero, Split, and then like a couple months later, I did Dig a Hole and Die, and all of it was just really great, influential stuff to me. And had a meaning to it. So, yeah, I miss those days. Those are the days where you feel really good about yourself and when, you know, things are just falling right into place.
So you're doing all these myriad projects. How do you measure success in what you do? I mean, you do YouTube. Do you measure it by views, or is it word of mouth?
It's a bit of both. My YouTube channel in total has had a collective of over 10 million hits in the 7 years I've been on there. So I think that's pretty cool. I know obviously other videos have had more. Some people go viral overnight. And I'm not going to say that I'm a celebrity or anything because I'm not. But for the work that I've put out and the amount of effort that I put in with the lack of promotion that I actually do, I really don't do a lot of promotion. Sometimes my reputation precedes me. Sometimes people just find me randomly and just are really happy. I just judge everything based on the reactions I get from the fan base and how happy people are when I put something new out.
I do have a question about one of your films in particular. It was the Friday the 31st. Now, how did you come up with that idea? Was it just that you're a big fan of Michael Myers and all that, or was it...
Well, it's no surprise I'm a fan of Michael Myers. All my fan film horror stuff circles around him. I'm actually looking at my top-rated videos right now, and that's my number two highest-rated video. I have 1.1 million hits on that. And then my number four video is The Last Halloween, followed by my number five video, which is Nightmares on Halloween 1. So the Friday the 31st came about in we started filming that in January of 2005, actually. It was the same guy who played my Freddy Krueger in the first Nightmare Ends. He had been going around all the Halloween sites and basically just, you know, trolling and bragging and whatnot, and people have given him responses saying, you really need to do another one, you need to do another one. And he kept calling me saying, Chris, we need to do another one, we need to do another one. So I went on this website that I was talking to a couple of fans at one point, and I had said, all right, guys, what should I do? Because I didn't have any ideas. And someone had pitched to me Michael versus Jason, and that was the biggest thing. Like, what's the next horror thing I should do? And everyone's like, and this is in the days of verse movies. You know, Freddy versus Jason came out 2 years prior, so people were still coming off of that. Everyone still wanted to see Michael versus Pinhead, and I already did Freddy versus Michael with Pinhead in it. So, what's the next big thing? So they said Michael versus Jason, and I had this guy send me over a story that he had written, and I looked it over, and I kind of enjoyed the idea of having like Tommy Jarvis being a paramilitary soldier who was hunting Jason, and I because what I needed to do, Michael and Jason technically should never ever meet, ever, because Jason comes out on Friday the 13th and stays around until about Monday the 17th. That's about it. You know, that's his range of week, and Michael Myers only comes out on Halloween, which is the end of the year, the end of the month. So there's no point in hell that these two would ever really meet unless you have a really clever title. And I had seen a couple of fan films where people were like, Halloween the 13th, Michael versus Jason. I go, wait a minute, that makes no sense. Why is Halloween on the 13th of October or of any day of the year?
Right.
That makes no sense. So I said, what if I call, and I wanted to keep in the realm of the title, and I wanted to be clever and cheeky about it. I go, what about Friday the 31st? It's a palindrome. 1331, bingo. And I still have, to this day, people who actually write me go, it's called Friday the 13th. You got it wrong, dude. And I laugh at them. I go, are you retarded? Are you seriously trying to give me a grammar check on this title? You don't realize it's a versus film, do you?
One thing I really liked about the film was that it goes with the canon if you follow like 1, 2 and then H2O.
Exactly. And that was always my goal too. I really wanted to, I think fan films, unless you're deliberately saying this is a non-canon project, it's a real challenge to stick with canon and do something that you can actually watch and follow the story.
Right.
So when we did Friday the 31st, I wanted to tie in John Strode, who was never wrapped up in Halloween Resurrection, and I wanted to wrap up, you know, what could have possibly happened with, you know, Tommy Jarvis. So we did that story, and that was fun. That was a long and cold shoot because, again, we're shooting in the middle of January in North Jersey, so that was not fun. But the project was what it was, and I was very proud of it at the time when it came out.
I want to touch off and then jump back into the movies real quick, but I want to talk about The Protector, your comic book series. He's an original character, something you created. When did you first create him? And was comics something you always wanted to go into eventually, or is it something you
comics
came into
always,
after?
They were always on my agenda. I grew up with comic books, and actually The Protector was a movie first that I did in 2006 as a response to the death of the Blue Beetle and the loss of innocence that DC Comics had at the time. That was the Infinite Crisis, where basically they started just murdering all these B-listers from the 90s and 80s that they didn't want anymore. And I'm like, we don't need these characters. We're going to just X them out. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Whatever happened to comic books that, pandered to the audience, that taught morals and made you feel good about yourself? And what about the fan base of all these characters that you're killing off? It's not fair. And I remember that one time I actually, dressed as Blue Beetle, met up with Dan DiDio at one of the conventions, and I said, hey, you know, what about Ted Kord? I like that guy. Is he ever coming back? And the guy just looked me straight in the face, deadpan, and said, no, get over it. It was very hurtful, you know? I felt that I was being negated as a fan. So I made The Protector as just a way to harken back to what comics used to be, to remind people, hey, you know, this is it. And the comic and the movie was a little bit nihilistic, but ultimately that's what started the character. And then when I did the comic book, I just said, all right, I don't want the comic to be as depressing as the movie. So we decided to do like a Glory Days story of just him in his heyday doing stuff.
Now, something that has been driving me crazy, and I'm sure I want you to be as candid and honest about the whole thing as possible. What drew me to you through
Damian Dragon was, of course, the Deadpool series. First of all, right off the bat, what happened with it? You guys had two episodes which were killer. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it got pulled offline by Marvel. Can you go more into that without getting in trouble? And what is this? Well, yeah, go more into
you,
why Marvel.
I will give you the best answers I can give you without, getting into trouble. Ultimately, what happened was the videos were up there. Someone had essentially seen them, and they were taken down due to copyright infringement. The official word on it is that we can't make them just because it's not our character. And, again, like all I can really say is that we don't want to ruffle any feathers, so we're going to bow out, play ball, smile and nod, and we will, we're not going to put them out there at this moment.
Have you ever been approached by another major company before about pulling this stuff?
I was approached by DC regarding my fan films back in 2006. They were a little different regarding, how they approach things. And I'm not trying to play sides or anything like that, but every company has their own way of approaching situations, handling business. And regarding the Deadpool web series, I have to honor the requests that were made by Marvel and its affiliates regarding this project.
Now, were you surprised by that reaction? Because there are other, science fiction comic press.
I was surprised. I had actually posted a letter about it on my page, saying how I felt. And I feel as a fan, you want to be accepted. You want to be accepted for what it is that you're doing, and you're hoping that what you're doing is going to have a positive effect on everybody. Unfortunately, sometimes you can't, and it's not like I can really complain about it because the character was never mine to begin with. So I did what I did, and that was it. It was just an homage, and like I said, if the opinions are ever changed, I'll be very happy, and if they're not, there are no hard feelings.
Yeah, I just found it interesting because, LucasArts has embraced fan films for years. You would think with all its free promotion, as long as you weren't making money off of it, I would think it would have been at least begrudgingly accepted as long as you weren't damaging the characters.
Our goal was to just, make something that was, fun and that the fans would enjoy and appreciate. And, with the hope that maybe somebody in a position of power would see it as well and approve of it. But like I said, you can't always, you hope for the best, but it's not always going to work. I know how a lot of other people, I'm happy that Lucas approves of his fan films. I approve of fan films, and I've even held a contest for Protector fan films and Methodic fan films. So it just comes down to, your personal taste and how you handle things.
Now, does something like this discourage you? Like, you know what, screw this, I'm walking away. Or does that never even come across your mind?
No, I'm not the kind of person that gives up. What I will do is, I learned my lesson. If Marvel does not want me doing anything with their characters, I will respect that, and I will not do anything regarding that anymore. As of right now, I am going to be focusing on some more original pieces. I want to just kind of let, the heat on this one die down. I want things to blow over. And in time, if things change, they change. If not, they don't.
So no chance of a leak.
No chance of a what?
A leak someday.
I have no say on that. I have no I can't
right.
Get into something like that.
No, I gotcha. Yeah, gotcha. No, I understand. Like, anything coming? What is the immediate future for Blinky? What's the next movie you're releasing? Next series you're releasing?
The next product we have in line, actually, is we are doing a remake of Methodic. That was my first feature-length film in 2007, and I have decided now that I want to remake it. And it's kind of funny, you know. Everything does get remade, but how often is it that something gets remade by the guy that did the first one? So I'm going to be remaking my first horror film, and the only reason why I'm doing it is not for the money, not for the fame or the glory, because there is none. I'm doing it because I can actually do it better. The title of the movie is Methodic, and I realized that I can make it more methodical. So if I have the ability to make something better than it was story-wise as well as cinematically with effects, I'll do that. I've pulled my fans, I've asked what people want to see, and everyone really likes the idea of Methodic as well as some of my other stories, so I'm leaning towards that. I'm also going to be doing a couple of other shorter projects. One is called Death Game. Damien Dragon will also be in that one. It's kind of like an homage to movies like The Running Man or Death Race or Gamer, where you have that game show where people murder each other for insane prizes. And in this one, it's basically like a black comedy. You have this horrific slasher who goes up against Damien, who's a death row inmate. And then you have, you know, me, who's playing this douchebag TV show host. The way we want to tackle it is kind of like how RoboCop tackled consumer marketing, and how desensitized we were with all of the marketing that they had within the movie itself for OCP.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like that. It's another project we're going to be working on is, let's see, what else are we doing? We're going to be doing, I'm looking at my thing right now, we're going to also be hopefully doing a movie called Random Acts of Violence at some point later in the spring or summer. And I think that's all I can get into right now without being held accountable.
Hey, one last follow-up. I mean, is this your full-time job, or do you have something else, you know, that you got to do?
I'll tell you what I tell everybody else. I'm only qualified to do two things in this world: make movies and flip burgers. And I don't flip burgers.
Gotcha.
There you go.
That's a good answer. I'm going to steal that if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, is there any place that people can follow yourself, Blinky Productions, to find out more about?
I'm so glad you asked that question. There definitely is. For all of you out there listening, you can go to my YouTube channel, which is Blinky500. You can follow me on Facebook by typing in Chris Notarilli. You can go to my website, blinky-productions.com. And if you're a fan of fan films in general, I would say just check out all my work. I cannot start giving out names of causes or movements that I'm a part of or I'm affiliated with, but I'm very sure someone who's listening with the initials DV will tell you all about it. But yeah, I would just say check me out, follow me on Facebook, and look out for more projects coming my way.
All right. I do want to thank you for this. You're welcome anytime if you have something you want to plug, if you just want to talk.
I want to plug my wonderful fiance Andrea right now. She has been the boss lady of the whole thing. She's actually the only original character that was featured in the Deadpool web series. So I can say boss lady, boss lady, boss lady, boss lady, all I want without having any legal fight.
Well, there you go.
She's been the one who's been helping me through all of this with legal, and as well as being the brains behind Blinky Productions. So I just wanted to thank her on the air. I know she's listening.
All right. Again, thank you for your time. I know you're a busy man, and just keep it up, because you really do have a following, and it's really just for the fans. So I do want to thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
All right. And you have a great night, sir.
You too. Bye, guys.
All right. So that was Chris Notarelli from Blinky Productions. Fantastic job, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah, so...
And I'm serious. For those who are out there thinking, the movies have production second to none and looks perfect. Like, it looks like they really take the time as far as following story canon and making the movie look spectacular. They really do. Chris does a fantastic job.
I can't speak to whether or not it follows the comic books at all, but what I saw, the Deadpool was very good.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really a shame, the fate of that series, because it was really picking up, and now we have to wonder where it was going.
I never laughed. I have laughed that hard only a few times at the end of that last episode. Just killer. Killer. If you could search Deadpool web series, find it somewhere online. Somebody's got it somewhere, and watch that. Just fantastic.
Yeah, it really was. So a fantastic evening here. Now, Omega, I do want to get back into the released fighters. Of course, there were 16. Another one of my favorites, The Janitor, was released.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that one doesn't bother me so much.
It's The Janitor.
Well, he's the janitor, yeah. But the janitor is, he's past his prime, let's say.
Well, yeah, but come on. He just looked like a guy that got done finishing a beer and they shoved him into the octagon. You got to respect that in a way.
Well, I mean, not everybody can be the most handsome fighter, I guess. There's got to be the blue-collar guys, you know, along with the swimsuit models, but you know, the rest of the guys that were cut. Yeah, there were some guys that made some noise at one time. You know, Jorge Santiago, Terry Etim, you know, who's had some very good fights, lost pretty badly the last couple of fights. Jay Heron, who was highly touted for a while.
Terry Etim.
Yeah, so I said Terry Etim. I did say Terry Etim. Josh Grispy was talked about for a while, and you know, Jacob Volkman was also talked about for some time. Wagner Prado. These are guys that were, you know, at one time thought to be up and comers, but you know, in their last fights, they have not got it done.
You know what makes me sad? My favorite name in all of MMA.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
Ulysses Gomez.
Ulysses Gomez, yes.
Ulysses Useless Gomez was released as well.
Yeah, well, you know, he's got to actually win a fight in the UFC.
Living up to his nickname.
Useless, yeah.
But
you got to live the gimmick, that's all I got to say.
He certainly did this time.
Yeah.
I can't wait till he's back in, you know, Maximum Fighting Championship or something of that nature.
Yeah.
Ulysses. But, I mean, that's really big news. I mean, UFC, they normally don't come out with, like, a big – like, this is par for the course for WWE, spring cleaning. They, you know, usually between WrestleMania and the next pay-per-view, they get rid of tons of guys.
I got one, Jack Swagger.
Well, I would, he's probably on that short list right now.
Yeah, he's probably the only one on the list right now.
I'm sure they have JTG still with them. I don't know how he makes it each time, but he's still there. So
I would get rid of Great Khali before JTG.
I can't even remember last time I saw JTG on TV. But
Time I saw him, he was getting destroyed by Ryback.
Yes.
It was about 2 weeks ago or something like that.
Really?
He
did one of the run-ins. What was the run-in at the end of the Raw where all the wrestlers run?
Oh, for Rumble? He was in that? Nonsense?
Yeah, you're right. He was in Rumble. That was him. He was in it.
Okay.
And I said the same thing you did. The hell is he doing here?
Yeah, but getting back to my original point, UFC doesn't normally do a whole big house cleaning like this, so this is pretty big news.
Well, you know, they do house cleanings after pretty much every event. There's at least three or four fighters that are cut for whatever reason. This is the biggest I can remember in quite a while, and certainly with John Fitch being cut, the most high profile.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in ages.
Yeah.
in ages. It really is a big thing. Now, of course, this weekend we, of course, have UFC 157, and we get to talk about Dan Henderson because he's in the co-main event. We'll get to that in a second. Now, of course, the main event is the women's bantamweight title up for grabs. Ronda Rousey taking on Liz Karamouche. What's your pick?
I gotta bring out the old standard. Death, taxes, or Rousey by armbar.
In round one.
We gotta say it. This is a historic fight, win or lose for anybody.
A main event, women's fight.
Women's fight, huge mainstream exposure for this fight. Real Sports on HBO had a thing on Rousey yesterday.
Really? I wasn't aware of that. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah,
thank
check
you.
It out. Unfortunately, it was a very mainstream sports view of mixed martial arts. So it was not very good, not very complimentary of mixed martial arts as a whole, although it was very complimentary of Rousey. But yeah, historic fight for a couple of reasons. Obviously, it's the first female fight on a UFC card at all. First fight in the main event, first women's championship fight, first openly gay fighter of any gender in the UFC.
Oh, I didn't even know.
Liz Karmouche is the first openly gay fighter.
I did not know that.
She is, you know, former Marine. She's got a good story too. Winning will no doubt change her life if she can do it. The problem is she faces a buzzsaw in Rousey. Karmouche is a very, very good wrestler. She's a strong girl. The problem is Rousey for the 135 division is just as strong, and she is better.
Definitely better. I followed Karamouche through Strikeforce. You know, she's a good fighter, but not on the level of someone like Ronda Rousey. So,
yeah, I mean, she's sorry. Karmouche lost. Karmouche's losses are to former champions. In Sarah Kaufman. And she was holding her own very well against Marluse Kunin up until she got caught with the triangle choke. It was very reminiscent of the first Chael Sonnen Anderson Silva fight in that she was dominating Karmouche in that title fight up until she got caught. So she's not a slouch. She's a very good fighter. I think, as we said, Rousey's just on another level right now. I would lay money on Rousey most of the time. All the time, probably.
Now, of course, this is a fight that we're looking forward to. And one of my friends in the blogging world, Camel Clutch Blog, put out a great article about it. I'm going to post it on the Hell in a Cell page, as well as probably just repost the whole thing in its entirety on HIACTalkRadio.com. And that is Dan Henderson is kind of underappreciated. I think even by you, Omega Squad. We're talking
maybe.
About... we're talking about a world-class fighter, a guy who's won titles in three different companies, two different divisions. We're talking about a guy who is undoubtedly an icon, a world-class fighter, has been for three decades. Think of it that way. And you have a guy competing at this high level. He really should have been given a title fight. Unfortunately, he lost it because of that whole thing with UFC, whatever it was, 151, I guess.
He was given title fights, two of them to be exact.
Well, no, but since he came back from Strikeforce, he has
well,
not.
Well, since he came back from Strikeforce, but...
Well, yeah, but he had the fight. I thought he looked really good against Anderson Silva when he fought Silva. Thought he looked really good.
He looked okay for a while.
Well, until he got caught.
He was pushing the pace. He was
the
being aggressive.
But the first round was definitely Henderson. Can we agree on that?
I actually do agree on that.
There you go. That's all I wanted out of you tonight.
Okay, we're done. Good night, folks.
No, but so Dan Henderson, you know, no slouch. But again, he's going into someone very unorthodox, someone who has a stance, someone who will make you pay with counterstrikes. Lyoto Machida, of course, a former UFC light heavyweight champion. Dan Henderson has never won a UFC title, so this is really a big fight. It has to be a title eliminator, even though nothing's guaranteed to Henderson. What are your thoughts? I'm going Henderson after three. So
really, I'm shocked. You went with Henderson. you could have caught me by surprise and picked Machida. That would have been fun.
I think it's going to be a really close fight, but I think Henderson usually wins his first two rounds if he can survive. If he can survive three rounds, it's definitely Henderson.
I tell you what, if there's one person that benefits from this fight being moved from the main event to the co-main event, it's Dan Henderson.
Oh, definitely.
Going three rounds instead of five rounds works in Henderson's favor very much. Obviously, the longer the fight goes on, the more it favors Machida. So cutting it short as possible is great. As you mentioned this last week, I said Henderson comes in and tries to get out as soon as possible. This one, you got to think whoever wins this fight is up for the next shot at John Jones or Chael Sonnen or John Jones. But
John
Jones. Henderson's
been said, though. That's what I'm saying. Nothing's been guaranteed.
Yeah, no, nothing's been guaranteed. You're absolutely right about Henderson. Henderson has a number of accolades. He is a great fighter. We can agree to disagree about whether he's underappreciated. He's like I said, world class Olympic wrestling, knockout power, aggressive, tough as nails, great.
Exciting fights. The Bisping fight wasn't really that exciting, but he's always in exciting fights. That had an exciting finish, at least.
Yes. I agree. He has not faced a opponent, other than possibly Anderson Silva, that is as elusive and as cunning as Machida. Machida is that counter fighter who will bait you in. And then hit you where you least expect it.
Well, look what happened to Bader.
Absolutely. Absolutely what happened to Bader. What happened to Randy Couture. he is dangerous. There's no way to talk about him other than saying he is dangerous in a lot
of world-class fight. He almost defeated John Jones during that title fight.
He was close.
Very close that first round, definitely. I scored it. 30-28.
I don't know if I went that far, but
I did.
It was close. It was his round. I mean
10-8. I'm sorry, 10-8. Not
10-8. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But Machida is just—he's that good. He's been the champion before, and up until his loss, when he lost the championship, he was unstoppable.
And he was.
He has looked very much like that again in his last several fights. With that Bader fight, it was devastating. That being said, Henderson has never been knocked out in 37 professional fights. And
he's only been, what, tapped once? And that's not even really part of Machida's game. He is a black belt or something, but...
Well, he does have Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so that's not really an issue. But Machida is not going to go there, probably. Machida is gonna hit you on a feet. He's gonna wait for you to come in. And he's going to land a counterpunch. He's going to duck. He's going to step back and then come in with that counter. Longer this goes on, more it favors Machida. Henderson needs to get in and get striking. He needs to find a way to hit him, overcome the elusivity, and actually put some leather to Machida's face. If he can do that, his power could take him to the victory because Machida can be knocked out. But the longer it goes, it gives Machida more time to gain points. I think that if the volume of strikes is going to go in Machida's favor, and if it goes three rounds, he's going to win on points. I'm not saying that Henderson can't win a round, but I think his game plan is get in and get out as fast as possible. And
he's an older guy. He doesn't have time for that.
Yes, he's got things to do.
He has like 50 kids. I was watching the UFC, I forget what they call it, but that program where they go behind the fights, and he has like 50 kids on a farm. I don't know.
Yeah.
And he went through a divorce, but, great. Somehow he went through a divorce and could spend more time with his kids. I don't know how that works, but God bless him.
We also have Uriah Faber coming back. You're going to have to take the name of his opponent.
Ivan Menjivar.
Thank you.
Yes.
Looks a lot harder. It's that J. Yeah, it looks harder with that J in there. The J really throws it off. But
it's intimidating J.
It is. Phantom weight fight. What do you think?
This one's pretty interesting. You know, Uriah Faber is a guy who generally beats lower tier guys. And the thing with Faber, I was thinking about this before the show. Everywhere but his limbs is durable, but his hands break and his legs were, you know, demolished by Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
You know, he's you're not going to probably knock him out, especially at bantamweight. He's a tough guy. But if he gets injured again, like he's been in the last several fights, he breaks his hand early or something like that, then he kind of loses his ability to take you down and to outstrike you. That Menjivar is good. He's a very aggressive guy. He's a very excited guy to watch. So Menjivar has a very definite chance to come in and hopefully get the victory if he can get down, if he can string some punches together. I don't think he's going to be a takedown artist, but he is good on the ground. That being said, you know, Brian's favorite strength is wrestling. So
yeah.
You're not going to be
and
able
submissions.
To.
Don't count out the submissions.
His submissions is good. I mean, you don't think he's a top level submission artist, but his wrestling makes up for it. And he's got more than enough skill with submissions to tap you out.
Definitely.
I see this kind of going Faber's way, providing he can avoid those injuries again and he's healed up. If he can, he'll take Menjivar down. He's all he's got to do is survive that initial assault from Menjivar, take him down and pound him out or submit him.
I think UFC would want Faber to win because it's easy to get behind a guy like that.
I don't. It's easy to get right behind Faber, but Faber doesn't need the win because he's not really in the title picture. He's lost so many title fights.
Yeah,
he's not really in the picture for a fight. You know, I see it more as if Menjivar wins, then he automatically gets vaulted up, and then the UFC can get behind him. I think there's more to win here for Menjivar.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. But
oh no, sure. But I'm just saying, I think the promotional machine is easier to get behind. Faber, because you know his looks and
yeah,
you know,
but
people just love the guy.
My argument is they're going to be able to do that win or lose though.
Oh,
so.
Fair enough. We also have two welterweight fights that round out the card. Court McGee taking on Josh Neer and Josh Koscheck taking on Strikeforce's Robbie Lawler. That's an interesting one, at least to me as a Strikeforce fan. To see Robbie Lawler already on the card. I mean, Robbie is a knockout type of guy. I don't know. Do you think he can catch Koscheck?
Koscheck is hard to put away. He's been put away, but he's hard to deal with.
He's durable. He's very durable.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, he fought against Johnny Hendricks to a decision. So, you know, he can take a punch. I mean, obviously it was... he lost to Matt Hughes, obviously, in by KO. But he's been knocked out before. But he's generally speaking a very tough guy, and his style is such that he smothers you and doesn't give you the opportunity to knock him out. You know, Koscheck has evolved, he still does tend to rely on his kind of lay and pray fighting style. He's tried to strike before, and he's been successful at it. So he's added that to his game, but his tendency is still to take you down and grind you out. I think Lawler won't be able to take that kind of athleticism and be able to get Koscheck in a position where he can knock him out. And the longer the fight goes, the worse it's going to get for Robbie Lawler.
Oh yeah,
you know, I mean,
I'm just surprised he's on the card. He's on the main card. That's my biggest surprise.
He needs to win.
Oh,
honestly.
Definitely.
Lawler needs to win. If he loses, I think you're going to see him in the next round of cuts.
I would definitely agree with that. We also have McGee and Neer. I'm going with McGee because I like his name.
Like Court McGee, you don't like the dentist? You like the janitor, but not the dentist? Josh Neer?
No, not a fan.
Not a fan. Yeah. Court McGee is a very tough guy. A very tough guy. We talk about durability. He's one of those guys that can take a punch. And Neer's pretty much the guy who knocks guys out if he's going to win.
Well, do you think he could be on the next cuts? He's lost his last two.
Yeah, he's definitely another one that his UFC career depends on winning. You know, he's one of those guys that has always been perennially around on the mid card of the UFC.
Mm.
But he picks up some wins and he picks up some losses.
You know, speaking of that, Neer is also at two losses. So this usually it's three and out with UFC. So I don't know. Back to your point. I'm sorry.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Neer was two losses, and you know, yeah, and Court McGee is also with two losses as well. You mean this is probably a loser leaves town match, but I think Court McGee is a guy that can take a punch, and Neer is a guy that really needs to strike to win. So I think it's going to be probably a grind out decision for McGee, and then we'll see. You know, the fact that he's on the pay-per-view at all is probably a good thing. It's probably lucky, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, looking at the undercard, how far has Brendan Schaub fallen? I'm just, wow.
Pretty far.
He was like the next big thing. And
He was, you know, coming off the Ultimate Fighter. He was the guy you know, and he beat Kurokop, he beats Gonzaga. And he was on top of the world, and then thinking, okay, he's two or three fights away from a title shot, and then he ran into Big Nog.
Yeah, Big Nog, see you later.
Yep, and then he ran into Ben Rothwell and got knocked out. Both first-round knockouts, so now you wonder about his suspect chin. And then you think, well, now I'm fighting LeVar Johnson, and this is a guy who knocks guys out.
I think that's why they put that together.
So... If you're trying to make a statement that you can take a punch and you still have a place in the UFC, I guess you could take a fight against LeVar Johnson and try to win. You know, that's a tough road to hoe with that suspect chin. If I'm flipping a coin, I think Shaw is a better skilled fighter. I really do. But I don't think he's that skilled. And I think Johnson, with his strength and his punching power, he just needs to get Schaub up against the fence, push him in, and hit him with a couple of short rights.
Boom. Over.
Boom. Done. I mean, that's what Johnson did in his previous fights when he against Pat Barry and Joey Beltran. Just put him up against the cage and bam.
And that's, of course, the main event on FX before they go live with the pay-per-view. Of course, that's on pay-per-view. I believe it starts at 10 o'clock. They usually do.
The pay-per-view starts at 10. The undercard will start at 8.
So there you go. And the preliminary card is on FX.
Yep.
For anyone interested on that. Boy, we also had Elimination Chamber. Was that this weekend? Or?
Yes, sir.
That was.
It was? Wow. It feels like so long ago.
I know.
No, wait. Was it this weekend? Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
Wow. Whatever. But what happened there, I don't even know. Swagger won or something, and Brock won.
Swagger won, loaded, and then spoke the joint.
The only thing I will say about Elimination Chamber is the six-man tag actually surprised me.
Wait, did you watch it?
I did watch it.
Wow, that's two in a row for you.
I know. My son wanted to watch it, so I was like, okay.
You spent money.
I spent money. Yeah, I know. Jesus. but the six-man tag was very good. I was surprised, given who was in it.
Who was in that match? I'm trying to look now.
It was The Shield versus Cena, Ryback, and Sheamus.
Well, why would that... Just the only person I see not too good in that would be Sheamus.
Well, you know, didn't expect as good a match. You still have Cena, and you still have Cena, and you have Ryback, and you think, okay, I'm going to get the same three moves from the guys. And you'll get a brogue kick from Sheamus, and it'll put somebody over the ropes, and it'll do the 10 slaps to the chest. And that was kind of what I was expecting, and I was expecting the Shield to get squashed. And that didn't happen. And the Shield, you know, as a team, great.
Oh, I mean,
really, really fantastic. And I've seen the Shield, and I expected the Shield to be semi decent, but I actually liked the match story. I thought it was really good with the spot through the guardrail came through, and that was well timed. And the ending, and the finish was great when Reigns came out of nowhere with the spear. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, these are guys that they're booking strongly. And Dean Ambrose, of course, for fans in this general area, the Philadelphia area, Dean Ambrose was Jon Moxley, the CZW World Champion. People have been touting him for years. I mean, when we had Adam Cole on, he talked about it. I was going to ask Chrissy about Moxley. But this is a guy that people knew about. So it's not a surprise to them. But luckily, the fans finally get to see it.
Yeah, and you know, I think you know, all three of those guys got futures as singles wrestlers.
Oh, eventually that's what's going to happen. I mean, I really think Seth Rollins has a great look. He's going to be something else. Moxley, of course, has already, you know, had the company on his shoulder, so to say. And he's a guy who can wrestle various styles. He was, of course, in the Tournament of Death matches. He's been around. I mean, he can do it. This is a guy who just has done it all, and like I said, the dues are finally coming due, so to say.
But they're wrestling like a tag team.
Oh yeah,
it's great. It's great. I mean, they're doing triple tags. And
it's an amazing thing to see in tag team wrestling.
I know, they're wrestling like a team. I was surprised. I don't know what I expected, because I guess I'm a jaded wrestling fan. But that's
Well, let's not forget Roman Reigns is part of the famous Samoan American wrestling dynasty.
Yeah.
I mean, these are guys that have pedigrees. It's finally coming forth. But go ahead, Dan. You were saying something.
No, you beat me to that. No, I was going to say I kind of agree with him. I was like, this is going to suck, and it was, you know, much more entertaining than I expected.
Yes.
And I like the thing they're doing with Punk and The Rock.
No comment there.
Yeah, I'm over it, but
no, that's my opinion.
Your opinion's fine and it's valid, but it's just I could care less about seeing it again.
Well, let me rephrase that. I like what they're doing on the Punk side of it.
Well, sure, but I mean, Punk is out of a. I find it for a guy who pretty much held the company together for the last year, over a year. To just put it on Rock, and I know the other side of the story, the business side of the story, that, of course, Rock is generating money, and it's all about money, and it's a business, and blah, blah, blah. But after WrestleMania, Rock will not be there. I don't think you do the short term to forget about the long term. That's why I was worried about the Shield, because I thought they were going to get lost in the shuffle, so to say. Thank God they weren't. But
well, hopefully Punk won't get lost in that shuffle either.
Well, I mean, Notorious, I mean, it just looks like he was a transitional champion until Rock came back. And that's a damn shame, because he was really one of the few reasons to watch WWE over the past year.
I don't know. I'm kind of hoping he gets another 400-some-odd-day reign on that.
You know, you would think and you would hope, but you never know. I mean, a lot of people are saying that Ziggler's going to cash in at the end, but he doesn't have that title. He doesn't have that briefcase. He has the SmackDown briefcase.
You know who won't be cashing in?
He cashed in already, so it's already over for him. he certainly did. But so, guys, another great episode.
What about the belt?
I could care less about it. I think it still looks like crap.
It's ugly. It's ugly.
That's what I was. That's all I wanted to know.
They're all ugly, other than the world title. That's just my opinion.
World title, that's a classic style. You can't get much better than that.
No, you really can't. I don't know why they're moving away from more traditional belts. So the new stuff looks stupid.
It really does. I mean, like that big dub. Just come on.
Am I wrong? Am I wrong in preferring the spinner belt to the new one?
No, I would say
not at all.
I would say no.
Better than the devil than you know, the better the devil than you don't, whatever I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, I guess maybe it's just because I got used to it after a while. Once they stopped spinning, it was fine.
I was spinning the other night again, though.
Was it?
Was it?
When he threw it, when CM Punk threw it on the ground at Raw, it started spinning again.
Oh.
Like the W moved a little bit.
Oh.
I would say my favorite title was the Winged Eagle, of course, that was introduced at the title tournament, WrestleMania
4. Classic one. Yeah.
That one was the one that Savage held for a year. And, of course, it went on and on and on, but until the Attitude Era, and then you had different titles come around. But
well, that first Attitude belt wasn't bad either.
No, who knows?
And there was nothing wrong with the Undisputed belt, the WWE Championship.
Oh gosh, no! Yeah,
that was perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The one that Brock held for quite some time. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I agree with you, man. But who knows? Who knows? I mean, it's a big title that has a big W on it, so I guess it makes sense as Rock goes out on his promotional tours. That's all it is. I mean, he's a walking postboard. But just looking very closely, it looks like Del Rio retained against Big Show. Cesaro against Beat the Miz by DQ. I guess it was a low blow.
That was dumb.
Fair enough.
It was dumb. Pointless and dumb.
Jack Swagger winning the Elimination Chamber, and only good things come to those who win the Elimination Chamber.
You know, like finding a dime bag for a dime.
Oh, good gracious, what a dummy. You know, I haven't called anyone a dummy in quite some time. Jack Swagger.
He is a dummy. You're dummy of the week.
He's the dummy of the week. Maybe I should have a segment, you know, the dummy of the week.
Dummy of the week.
It's none other than Jack Swagger.
Brought to you by InTheRoom.com.
Yeah, right. we also have The Shield. Of course, that was Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins. They defeated the mighty team of Ryback, John Cena, and Sheamus.
Great match.
And Sheamus, of course, didn't learn a thing from the Monster Factory. Just
not
putting that out there. Putting that out there. And he still has Robert Knight's WrestleMania DVD.
You mention that again, I'm going to curb stomp you.
Dolph Ziggler with AJ Lee and Big E Langston defeated Kofi Kingston in 4 minutes. That's great. Caitlin defeated Tamina in a match that had absolutely no buildup. And The Rock, of course, beating CM Punk. At least they got a little bit of time, 21 minutes. So there you go. And I would also like to bring up, we had over the weekend, New Moon Rising Wrestling. Here's the results there real quick. We had LJ Cruz. He pinned the debuting Beverly Berwick. Tyrino defeated Nathan Avery by disqualification when Mark Angel of the Burgundy Brigade interfered. Fusion DS retained the New Moon Rising Wrestling tag team titles, and they've never been stronger, Dan. Never been stronger. By beating highly entertaining wrestlers after a Fusion Destroyer. Keikoa pinned Ron Jones after a top rope elbow, a beautiful elbow off the top rope, I might say. And, of course, Ron Jones probably had the move of the night. I'll have the audio for you next week of when Ron Starr, damn it.
What the hell?
I don't know. I got John Jones on the mind here. But when Ron Starr left his feet, tried to take Keikoa to the clinic and hit a crossbody block.
It was amazing looking.
Oh my goodness! You know, there's very few times that I lose my stuff. I lost it for that move. Let me tell you, Mike Reed, during an edition of Cliff Light Spotlight,
which was exciting,
joined the Burgundy Brigade. My goodness. So now they have the United States title. The Burgundy Brigade now has Mike Reed, the United States champion. They have the center of attention, Mark Angel, and, of course, the standard of excellence in Nathan Avery. So
Mike Reed with the fastest heel turn ever.
You know, he got tired of the fans, and the fans tired of him. In fact, a few fans turned their back during the match. Let's just say that.
Mike Reed then went on to defeat Steve Zaff following an upgrade. And after the match, Dan, the gold standard, Mike Madoff, came out and sprayed down Steve Zaff and said, hey, you better be ready for next month because you got me, pal.
Wouldn't you?
He had the smell of the stench of defeat upon him.
Yes, it stunk, stunk to high heaven.
Then we have... The Legion of Anarchy beat the Legion of Anarchy beat the crap out of Justin America of the Me Society and Jake Bishop.
You lost, Justin. You lost.
Who was there? Jake Bishop was there, but he wasn't in the match entirely too long.
Justin lost.
And it was a double choke slam that put Justin away. The Master Illusionist with Larry Lawson defeated O-Dog by countout when Ron Stark appeared at ringside with Sienna Duvall. And O-Dog left the building to go fight. I have no idea what's going on with that. So Ron Starr, Sienna Duvall, kidnapped her. I don't know. And then, of course, the match between Matt Tremont and Crazy Ivan ended in a double disqualification when they both attacked the master official, Anthony Rock. I don't know. What's going to come out of all this? Find out. There are two matches signed for the Ides of March coming up on the 16th. Now, granted, the Ides of March is the 15th, but hey, we're going to do it on the 16th. One more day.
That makes sense.
But Mike Reed taking on the United States champion, Mike Reed, part of the Burgundy Brigade now, taking on Tank Tolan for that heavyweight championship of New Moon Rising Wrestling. And, of course, this is going to be a barn burner. Mike Madoff, the gold standard, taking on the paperboy, Steve Zaff. So...
Tire band.
Yeah, that's gonna knock people's socks off, let me tell you. I can't wait. Can't wait for that, Dan. How about you?
No, I can't wait for to see what comes out of the Tremont Crazy Ivan thing.
Well, I have heard that Crazy Ivan will not be getting his day pass next month, Dan.
Really?
Yeah, he will not be getting it. Don Warren gonna make sure that does not happen.
Definitely not getting it?
Not getting it, Dan.
Boy.
Not happening. But do either of you have anything else?
No.
I forgot plugs. Chrissy Rivera, you can find her at Jersey Jones, and that's J-E-R-Z-E-E Jones. A lot of Jones tonight, let me tell you. Jack Swagger was Jonesing, apparently. I don't
know. He was Jonesing for a joint.
Yeah, something. I don't know. Something going on there.
Officer, I don't have anything in my car.
Oh, Dan, you had to go there.
Officer, I don't have a thing. Smoking some weed.
I wish Zeb was there to put the officer in his place.
Officer, your last name is Ramirez. You know what? Never mind.
Yeah, I think you were going to
Did you get that job legally, Mr. Ramirez?
And you can check out...
Mr. Ramirez.
You can check out Chrissy Rivera's exploits at czwrestling.com.
My throat's all dry.
Justin America is available at JustinAmerica82 on the Twitter.
Don't follow him.
And you can find out more about the Ides of March coming up on the
6th. At NMRWrestling at Twitter.
Also, NMRWrestling.com.
Yes, great announcers there. The best play-by-play in independent wrestling.
I certainly do agree. Also, we have, who else do we have? Blinky Productions. At Blinky 500. Follow him there. And, also,
and go to his website for the movies, blinky-productions.com. Great stuff on there.
I certainly agree with all of that, Dan. And we had a great episode. Chrissy Rivera. Great interview, Blinky Productions, great interview, and Justin America, even though he didn't answer the hard questions, I don't hold it against
him. He's full
of crap. Oh, stop it, Dan.
He's full of crap.
But for Omega, where can the fine people find you?
The fine people can find me on the Twitter, at Omega Squad.
Dan, where can people find you?
DanLaw83.
I am the host of Double D, the Dean of Credibility. You can find me at Folsom County, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
Well, we'll be joined by Devin Moore, hopefully. And I'm still working on the second guest.
Yeah, just put it out there so he has to come on.
And Chris Wilde of
ECWA.
Chris Wilde with an E.
Yes, Chris Wilde, of course, from ECWA, a competitor in this year's Super 8.
The noise of this podcast.
I hope he certainly confirms, but have a great week, and hopefully those are the guests next week.
See everyone.
We've got a powwow going on right here.
Now that over there, if we could see that, I wish it was on camera, but that is a meeting of the minds right there.
That wasn't nice, Dean.
The collective brain power in there could blow the electricity right out.
We need
of
to get Don
ground.
Warren in that TP.
Oh, my God. Don Warren. I swear, you know what? He's in control, like I tried to say earlier. And look, everything's gone straight to hell.
Let's kick it up to Cliff Light.
Straight to hell because Don Warren's regime is in control.